Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brew-Built X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brew-Built Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brew-Built line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brew-Built X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brew-Built conicals. You can trust Brew-Built with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brew-Built at morebeer.com.
Homebrewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, beer drinkers,
get ready for an all-new experience in information exchange and beer culture.
Your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers from around the globe
right to your home.
You're not just listening to broadcasters, it's the Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
Everybody's pumped today. We got a lot to do today. Everyone's real excited about the program and some good things happening. A lot of good guests covering a topic, hottest topic in brewing right now. We're covering all the bases with two of the best people in the industry today. And you're tuned to the right place is the point. You're always tuned to the right place.
That's good.
You know, you come to the BN for the, you all say, great entertainment, laugh it up, funny boys, make us laugh, dance like a clown. But who gets the best guests, the best topics, every time, the first time, right here?
It gets the job done, man.
Every time, the first time. You can't hear, JP?
It's just a little.
How about now? You hear now?
I hear you great.
You hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
You know how much money that guy makes?
A lot.
Can you hear me now, guy?
No. Do you know exactly? Or
no.
Are you just going to say a bunch?
No, I was going to say a real lot.
Oh, okay.
No, if you get one commercial deal like that, like the McDonald's guy, the Subway guy, the Can You Hear Me Now guy, it's almost more lucrative than being a movie star.
Oh, it is,
because
sure.
It's like a one-time thing. You don't have to keep like recreating yourself. Like, that's your gig. They make a fortune.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
The longer they get played, the more money they make.
Yeah, keep trying. I sit in my room a lot of weeknights.
And scream, are you there?
Practicing, like just trying to come up with different catch lines for people.
Yeah.
To see if I can.
We're all out of toner.
Because what a great gig, right? Like you show up, you record maybe he records 3 commercials in a day. He's done for a year.
And you got residuals just flowing.
Forever.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. Today we are talking about hops and malt, the shortages. We've kind of been talking about it briefly for, you know, just like everybody else for a couple months now. But we've got two of the head honchos in the industry coming on the program with us tonight. Shat and I teamed up to book this powerhouse of a show. And Shat did real well. I've got Ralph Olson, our good friend Ralph Olson, president of Hop Union. And Ralph's just one of the coolest guys in the industry. I just want to say, JP, you know him too.
Oh yeah.
The guy's just so much fun and so laid back and such a cool guy. And he's coming on the show tonight to talk about the hop shortage with us and different hop varieties that are out there. I know, Doc, you wanted to make sure we got into that.
Yeah, definitely.
We're going to talk a little bit about substituting hops that are missing, although he's real practical about that, and you'll hear what I mean when he talks about that. So we got Ralph on, and then Shat went out and got the president of Brewer Supply Group, Ian Ward, is coming on the program
nice.
With us after that. He'll be on at 6:30 to talk about the global malt shortage. And there's also a PowerPoint presentation that he put together to talk about that. So if you go to the forum right now, thebrewingnetwork.com, and just click on the forum button there, under the beer radio thread, you'll be able to download that PowerPoint presentation. You'll see it right there. So maybe you want to go grab that now, get it in front of you, and then when Ian comes on at 6:30, you guys will be able to kind of follow
along. You know, we got the oil prices going up.
Yeah.
We've got global warming, and now this.
I think
I'm just going to put the tube in my mouth and pull the trigger.
Yeah, because it doesn't get much worse.
Well, now everybody's going to get their attention.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to put the tube in my mouth and play with the ball. Oh, wait. I mean, yeah.
Next thing you're going to tell me, prostitution is illegal. You know? Ooh. I mean, ridiculous. I wanted to say, too.
It's at least frowned upon.
I got a lot to get to, but I wanted to point out a lot of weird stuff happened before the show today, Doc. Before you got here, very strange in this room. First of all, JP comes in and sits down and starts spewing blasphemy. He sits down and he says, you know, the more homebrew I drink, and I want to point out right now, it wasn't my homebrew he was drinking. He says, the more homebrew I drink, the more I really like commercial beer. That's what he says. I'm like, JP, we're about to do a homebrew show. And he said, the problem is, I kind of agree with the guy.
I mean, it wasn't a reflection, Chad, upon the beer I'm drinking right now, but...
Better not be.
But just like commercial beer, there's a lot of bad beer.
Right. And there, you know, you're thankful for professionals and everything.
Yeah, exactly. I'm ever going to stop drinking homebrew. I'm just,
no.
You know.
For example, you listen to some other podcasts out there. You're thankful that somebody knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm getting at here?
But it's too bad that guy in Australia doesn't really do a whole lot of shows. you mean this one?
This one.
Oh.
I meant this one.
Okay.
We're the ones who know what we're doing, JP.
Sorry.
You didn't get the memo?
I got it.
I sent it out this week to everybody. The guys, we know what we're doing.
Just to remind us.
FYI.
You guys don't read your email. Then, Schumann, you know, our trusty songster, Schumann, our faithful roommate.
Yeah. Our jukebox.
He's leaving the house about a half hour before the show. He says, I'm going to the mall. Okay, what are you going to the mall for, Schumann?
13-year-olds.
I said, I got to go get some of that... cucumber melon soap, hand soap. And also, I have to pick up some slippers. And I'm like, shoo, that's a little feminine. He goes, well, if you think that's feminine, I gotta get some incense candles for Shat. I guess Shat requested incense candles. So Schumann goes on a pilgrimage to the mall for foofy soap, slippers, and incense candles for Shat. What is going on around here with you guys?
And a merce. Yeah.
Did you get a merce?
I brought a little San Francisco back with me when I moved back in.
I guess you did. Doc, you believe this? And so he tells Schumann, goes, well, I built a bridge with Doc last week. Doesn't that count for something?
Hey, hammered nails, used a nail gun, saw.
I guess that helps a little.
I guess he spent all his testosterone.
Building that bridge.
He gets a certain allotment for the money. Yeah.
I gave all I could give.
Well, that and his hands got all calloused, I guess. He had to go get the special soap.
Yeah, that wasn't because of the nail gun, though.
I see. So I figured that since it was soap, you'd be interested.
Yeah, but it's not even like antibacterial. It's just some foofy melon soap, cucumber melon.
Oh, no, it kills bacteria.
It does.
Yeah.
I see.
Throw that into.
Well, you don't use any other hand soap? Like, that's, you had to make a special trip to get that?
I can settle for other hand soaps.
But that's really this.
But as long as he's going to the mall to get scented candles,
yeah,
he might as well pick up that,
might
too.
As well. I gotta say, and myself included, this house is so creepy sometimes. Like, what a bunch of creepy dudes.
Oh, well, let's not forget the creepiest part. That whole thing goes down, you come in, you're standing in the doorway, and you're going, I'm going to have a Corona in a can. I don't know where I am right now.
It's true.
You guys are really freaking me out right now. He's Shat's right over there showing his little incense candles going, oh, yeah, look at these.
And I'm drinking, all right. I'm drinking Corona out of a can.
I saw you drinking out of a can. I thought it was one of JP's PBRs.
No.
No, he would be so lucky.
Someone put it in my fridge. I thought I'd try it because I wanted to see what Corona's like without the skunk. I like it better with the skunk. This tastes like a cardboard box. You want to try it? You haven't, like, put anything dirty in your mouth in the last 24 hours, have you? It really tastes like cardboard. It doesn't taste like it doesn't have that skunky Corona thing.
Yeah, the cardboard really comes through.
Yeah, it does. I'd much rather the skunk come through, you know? It's not great. What do you
think? Try it in a glass.
You think it would have been better? I thought if I'm going to have it from a can, I might as well drink it from a can. I was doing the whole experience, the can experience, as opposed to the tasting beer experience. You know, give me my can back. All right.
Didn't want it anyway.
Wipe off your man goo.
Little mung on there.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is a strange day.
Yeah. I kind of want to go home right now.
All right, let me get down to business because I got to get Ralph on here real quick.
Business time.
So he can go do his thing. I put up a donation page this week. The Army had been asking me to put up recurring donations, which I thought was pretty stand-up of you guys out there asking me to do that. Basically, it turns out the whole BN Army is as lazy as I am, and they want to donate. They just can't remember to donate. They're all too busy smoking cousin, sitting their fat asses on the couch.
Waiting for the show.
Which, yeah. By the way, I say all these things as positive notes.
Yes.
So they asked me to put up a recurring donation thing. So you sign up once, and it just donates for you every month until you go and cancel it. And you have the power then.
We tap right into their credit card?
It taps into their PayPal. Or I guess you could, yeah, I think you can use your credit card if you want also.
Cool.
You have the option.
But your wife won't notice the PayPal thing.
Right.
She'll notice the credit card.
And in fact, I did get a number of emails from people saying, hey, you know, thanks for setting that up. I posted it in the forum earlier this week. And a number of them also said, I love supporting the BN. I hope my wife doesn't find out, kind of thing. Yeah. Or I use the account my wife doesn't see. Because you know what happened. You know how it is. The wife already knows how much you spend on homebrewing supplies and gear. And then, of course, every time you take a trip down to the beer store, you spend more money on commercial beer. So you're already getting bitched at how much you spend on beer.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, you're donating to the brewing network. So PayPal's accounts can be very secretive. My wife doesn't have to know.
Yes.
Doc knows. Doc, I've got eight. I have eight PayPal accounts. They're all encrypted. Hidden everywhere.
Just one.
So we have that page up now. If you now go to thebrewingnetwork.com/donate, you can go to our donate page. And there's all sorts of different levels. I mean, $2 a month is the lowest level. And for $2 a month, you can help support. And it goes all the way up to some ridiculous amount I thought I'd put in there just for fun. I thought it'd be funny. So check it out. If you want to support in a very easy way to do it, just go to our donate page. It helps us out a lot. A lot of people already signed up. And, guys, you're awesome. I really can't thank you enough. Bunch of cool people that did that and keeps us alive around here. So thank you. Also, new items in the store. I started putting that stuff up this week. The Jamil book, Classic Styles, is back up. Not signed. It's just a book.
Well, he told me how many that you sold that signed ones.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was that many.
You didn't know that?
No, he was you know, whining about his hand cramping and stuff. And, yeah, I can see, you know, cramping for 200 of them or something.
Oh, that's nothing. No.
I know. It was like 600.
Yeah.
Maybe he needs my soap.
Maybe his hand wouldn't cramp then, yeah. We did real well.
It's aromatherapy.
And to be honest, it was you guys who bought the book for us pretty much that have paid all of the bills around the Brewing Network from November probably through January.
Nice.
So it was really very generous of Jamil to spend the time signing all those things so that the listeners could get that. And then obviously very generous of people to buy those books from us because, let's face it, you can get it cheaper on Amazon. You can get everything cheaper on Amazon.
But then you're only supporting Amazon.
You are, and that's what I mean.
And actually takes it away from Jamil going through Amazon.
It does. Yeah, he gets a lesser royalty, I think, too. Yep. But really, I mean, people have to make their own fiscal decisions for their family and what their budgets are, and it doesn't bother me a bit if you go buy it cheaper from Amazon. If you can, it's awesome when you buy from people like us. So thanks to Jamil, and thanks to everybody for doing that, because it was a lot of books, and it really paid a lot of bills, too. So you guys are cool. But now the book's back up. And then I got a little surprise for you, too. I got a special signing coming up with John Palmer. So here's what we're going to do. I think this is how it's going to work. If you missed out on your signed copy of Classic Styles, or if you just want a signed copy of the best homebrew book of the decade, How to Brew, you can buy it from us. I think it's going to be in the store late this week. John Palmer's going to give me a bunch of signed copies of How to Brew.
Oh, that's cool, dude.
So here's what happens. You can either buy just How to Brew signed, or you can buy, like, the bundle of the decade. If you buy both books together, I'll give you a signed copy of the Jamil book.
Sounds like an infomercial.
Right? If you buy within the next 9 minutes, I'll throw in a coffee maker. But if you just buy Classic Styles, it's not signed. You see what I'm saying? If you buy How to Brew, it's signed. If you buy them both, they're both signed, and that's the deal.
Whoa.
And it's a great Christmas gift.
Both of them? I can get both of them?
You get both signed? Of them. Both of them, together.
Well, I can imagine that.
That's a...
I can't imagine a lot of stuff, but
that's
this...
That's a $0 value for the same price.
Wow.
You hear that?
We can all get it right here?
Tell me how.
All you have to do is go to thebrewingnetwork.com/store, and you can have not just one, but two.
Signed?
Signed copies.
What do you guys think about all
that? Isn't that great, folks?
Hey!
And not just that.
Oh, there's more?
There's more.
But wait.
If you pay the shipping, I'll ship it to you.
No.
That's right. That's,
no way.
That's,
I'm speechless.
All we have to do is pay the shipping?
That's two books, both signed. You pay the shipping, I'll put it in the mail. Huh?
You can't get that anywhere.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. The Brewing Network loves you. All right, so that's the deal. Stay tuned to the store this week because I got to wait to get the books from John, and then we're going to put them up there.
Hey,
so,
how long is this deal good for?
It will be good until I run out of books. So it's like I said, we're trying to get it all up and in the store in time for you to order it,
trying to get it up
and have it to you in time for Christmas because we think it's kind of a good Christmas thing. Okay, that's not all. There's more.
There's more.
I ordered hoodies this week.
Oh,
people have been asking me for hoodies for 2 years. So BN Army hoodies coming in the store. I'm supposed to get them around the 12th or the 13th. So the day I pick them up, I'll put them in the store. I might put them up for presale too,
nice.
So you guys can order already.
I'm big on hoodies.
Yeah, they're nice. They're nice hoodies. They're black. They're just like the BN Army tees with the grenade, and then it's got BN Army on the back, also like the bottom back. And I got a bunch of them. So you guys asked for them.
Right. You can put your rank on them.
Now you got to buy them.
Yeah. You put your rank on the shoulders.
Yeah, you can go buy. And you're ranked when you donate, by the way. We've decided that ranking in the BN Army is pay to play.
Good.
You got to pay for your rank. You can move right up the ranks, man. It's easy to do. What else? I really had so many things to announce. There's also other books I put up in the store. You can check them out. Brewing Lager Beer. I think I just put that in there. That's a great book. And then I put in like yeast plushies, like these stupid little yeast things. It's under fun stuff. I'm going to add some fun stuff to the store. And I think I put up the Homebrew Man t-shirts. Is that what it's called, JP? Homebrew Man? They're cool shirts. Check them out. I'm pretty sure I posted that. Now I can't remember. I did so many different things.
Will Brewing Classic Styles be signed by both John and Jamil?
No, it will not. Logistically, I can't do it. John lives in Southern California. Jamil lives up here. I can't get them. If you want them in time for Christmas, there's nothing I can do. So that's why, you know, you buy both, and each is signed by the other one.
Oh, sure, got them last weekend.
I tried.
They're
we
both
couldn't. They're on. Oh yeah, they were both here. I know, but we couldn't get the books. I mean, the books are in such high demand right now that ordering them and getting them, it's been a bit difficult. So we couldn't get the books in time. Also, no personal signings on that. That was a nightmare. So no personal signings. You can only just get a signed copy. They write a little note in there, though. They write like something like, you're the best or something. I don't know what they write. Whatever. Like, I like you.
I love your beer a lot, please.
Yeah, you're great, please.
Have a great summer. See you next year in homeroom.
Yeah. Don't ever change.
Have fun in the sun. Get laid in the shade, bro. Yeah, 2008.
Yeah. So I think that's all of the announcements that I had. And you know what? I got to skip feedback and everything because I got to get to Ralph. So it was really a short feedback day anyway. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do feedback at the end of the show. And we also have to do some listener tastes at the end of the show, which is going to be kind of cool. I guess we got a bunch of them, don't we?
Ton of beer.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of beer got sent into us.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So stay tuned to the BN. We're going to take a real short break right now. When we come back, we're going to get Ralph Olson from Hop Union on the phone. And we're going to be talking about the hop shortage and what you can do and what you're going to be able to find and the whole thing. Later on in the show at 6:30, we've got Ian Ward, president of Brewer Supply Group. He's going to be hanging out with us. We're covering all your shortages today, which is kind of like what we do around here.
What are you calling short?
This is the show for Doc. He's just a little guy. Hang in there, everybody. It's a great show we got planned for you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Did you know that every day a brewcaster goes to bed hungry? Did you know that the Brewcaster is silently calling for the help of people just like you? Do you know that every day the unicorn and the rainbow have to blow sailors for loose change? For less than the cost of a half-calf, quad-shot, venti, extra-hot, soy milk, triple-pump, hazel, low-fat foam, double-cupped macchiato a day, you can help starving adults in Pacheco. Your love can be felt for as little as 7 cents a day. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com/donate to sign up today for as little as $2 a month. Private first class in the BN Army. Buy your way up the ranks as corporal, sergeant, ranger, or colonel with an easy-to-do monthly donation that keeps Brewcasters alive and your favorite internet radio station broadcasting. No donation is too small to help those in need. Can't you find it in your heart to share your love with a Brewcaster? In return, you will enjoy the wealth of knowledge that comes with every episode of The Session, The Jameel Show, and yes, even that other show. Thank you for listening, and please sign up for your donation at thebrewingnetwork.com/donate today.
Beer, 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 I'm going for a beer. Beer, 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 I'm gonna drink some beer. I like drinking beer. Lovely, lovely beer. Beer, 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 I'm going for a beer. Beer, 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 I'm gonna drink some beer. I like drinking beer. Lovely, lovely beer. Beer, 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 I'm going for a beer. Beer, 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 I'm gonna drink some beer. I like drinking beer. Lovely, lovely beer.
To stop. I'm brewing my own beer. And it's like a German Pilsner, but it's black.
Yeah, it's a
sports beer. Sports beer. You know.
The home of live beer radio.
Thebrewingnetwork.com.
Because like beer,
radio shouldn't suck. You're listening to
The Session.
Beer. Radio shouldn't suck. Yeah.
Welcome back to the session, everybody. All right, we got a lot to get to because we've got two fantastic guests today, Ralph Olson from Hop Union and later on Ian Ward from Brewer Supply Group, talking about the shortages going on. Doc, I don't mean that as an insult to you. So you stick with us, all right?
Well, you just said there are only two awesome guests. You got three. I'm here.
I forgot about that. I always forget that. JP does, too.
Can I just say I used Schumann soap?
You did?
And it smells very nice.
Did you like
it? I got mad at me because I didn't use it. I used the other bathroom.
He got mad at you.
It's antibacterial, by the way.
It is?
The little beads in there.
Is it worth the trip to the mall is the question.
No.
No.
Is it worth the trip to the bathroom?
Is it worth the loss of your masculinity on air?
No.
Priceless.
Ralph, my friend, how are you?
I am here. How are you?
Wonderful.
Ralph.
Good, good. I always like having Ralph on the show. He's just a fun dude to hang out with and drink beer with.
Ralph, you need to come on the show, like down to the Bay Area here, man.
We've never had you in studio.
Yeah, I was shoveling snow all day today. It'd probably be really nice to be down there right now.
Oh, we were riding motorcycles and tanning. It was great.
Girls in bikinis.
Surfing.
Yeah.
Why not?
Our whole neighborhood was in bikinis.
Barbecuing out there, drinking light beer.
Yeah.
But a week after next, I'm going to Mexico, so to heck with you.
Oh, damn it. Just one-upped us. Now, I was thinking, we got a lot to cover with Ralph, and he's very generous with his time. I actually think that Ralph's one of my favorite guests because he takes my calls. And he's funny, too, because even if he doesn't want to take my call, he does. He takes my call, and he goes, hey, listen, really don't want to talk to you right now. I just thought I'd pick up the phone and let you know that.
Not many people do that.
No,
and the world would be a better place if we were all on just, you know, even playing field.
I always respect that about you, Ralph.
Well, I appreciate that.
Now,
as you always respect me the next morning. That's what matters.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what I was thinking, though, and I wanted to just ask you about it real quick, is as much as you're one of my favorite dudes in the beer industry, I was at the GABF. I saw you out there this year. And I was thinking, you must have had a real tough time at the beer festival this year because every brewer in the country is there. And I know they were all just bitching at you about where are the hops.
Well, it's interesting. You get a lot of different reactions from people. I get some that are worried about my welfare and how I'm doing to where I can stick any hops. So it's a pretty wide gamut. It is interesting. Most people, I will say, though, are pretty understanding, are just saying, hey, do what you can to take care of us, and
good.
They're pretty good. But you do have a few that can be a little difficult. But the most difficult aspect of the whole thing, that's even why I said to come on this, and I've done some other things.
Yeah.
It's saying the same story over and over
to
1,000 people. It's very, very difficult.
Right. Well, at least here you can cover a couple thousand at once. So
that's what I'm saying, and that's a good thing because a lot of people can then hear and then pass it on. And it is very, very difficult. Even at work now, the calls we get, I call it paralytic. You know, you can't get any work done because everyone's calling wondering about where their hops are. And
yeah.
I'm going, give me some time to go find some hops and stuff, and maybe we'll get something.
Leave me alone for a second. Yeah.
Leave me alone for a little bit. Yeah. I'm trying. And I actually did go to Germany here a couple weeks ago. And the good news there, I went to what's called the Brau, which is a big trade show, and most dealers go over to sell hops and find customers. I went over just to try to buy hops, and I did find some.
You did?
So, good news is, and that's what people don't understand, is I'm constantly working on trying to buy additional hops. I was actually trying to buy hops today from a grower.
Really?
Because there are some hops available. Problem is they're getting very expensive, hard to get, and the price went up this week alone, in my opinion, to U.S. growers about 40%.
Really?
For the few guys that have hops.
Okay. See, that's what I would think, that not only, you know, you're paying these insane prices, but you can't be the only one calling these places asking for their hops. So when you go over to Germany, like you did, you just went a week ago, I think, right?
Yes.
And you go around to these places asking for hops. I mean, you got to be the 50th guy who's you know, like they must have a lot of people doing that. How are you able to find hops from these people?
I like to say it's my good looks.
I've seen you, Ralph. I'm not so sure.
Well, It's in the eye of the beholder.
I see.
No, you know what it is? It's kind of relationships that you work on. It's kind of constantly working on trying to get them. You know, you let these people know you're interested.
Okay.
And it's a lot of it comes back to your old-time relationships. And that's what pays off sometimes.
Okay.
The most difficult situation that we have is, and to get so people understand, because I know the home brewers are wondering, well, where's my hops?
Exactly.
The craft brewer's going, where's my hops? The brew pub's going, where's my hops?
Yeah.
You know, well, the bottom line is it's a world industry, and there's breweries throughout the world that are looking for hops, and there's a lot of people in other places in the world that don't have enough hops. We're talking Eastern Europe, China, other big countries, and the problem that we're running into is those are the people that are raising the prices and are offering, because they don't care, they're going to pay whatever.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for us here in the U.S., a lot of those countries are using a stronger currency against ours.
Yeah.
You know, the U.S. currency is kind of sucky right now.
Right.
And you know, I remember the euro back in about 2001 was like about 80 cents or something. Mm-hmm. Now it's a buck and a half.
Right.
So even though these people are paying four or five times as much, in our minds, they're not really paying that much because their currency's worth about twice as much.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I hadn't put that in the equation either, but yeah, it makes a lot of sense
to me.
It's
a big one.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So you're not
that's
only
what I'm here for, to help you out.
I appreciate that. Yeah. That's what I like too, is that Ralph knows I'm kind of an idiot, so he puts everything in simple terms for me. It's perfect.
That's what people don't realize. We're really, it's a world growing. The hop growers, it's a world thing, and brewers, it's a world thing, and unfortunately, a lot of the craft brewers, brew pubs, and even home brewers are a recipient of a bigger game that's being played today.
Okay. Now, and that's kind of the question, too, because, and here's what we've done, Ralph. I know this is kind of redundant for you to answer a lot of these questions, but we've, like, had a question answered here or there on our shows over the last couple months, but now I kind of feel like we're getting it right from the horse's mouth.
Not that you're a horse or anything.
Yeah, not
we
to
love
insult
you very much.
Insult you. But, so, for example, homebrewers...
I've been called a stud, but I don't know about a horse.
So, the homebrewers end up kind of feeling, all right, if the craft brewers are on the high priority list, because they're buying the majority of the hops, what are you telling the homebrew shops? Are you saying, look, guys, I don't have hops for you because I have to give it to craft brewers, or are you separating your supply?
No, it's not happening at all, and that's a real misnomer, and it's a difficult thing. It's so difficult all the way around, first of all, because there is a shortage of hops. There's not enough. But, for example, you do, as you find some more, you try to prorate or give everybody some hops to use.
Okay.
And even with the homebrew shops, now, for example, you guys at the Beer and More Beer, or whether it's an L.D. Carlson or whoever it may be, you try to keep filtering more hops to them. Now, are you going to be able to give them everything they want? Maybe, maybe not, depending on the market. But, no, there's not really a – I don't view a craft brewer is any more special than the homebrew market, because all for me, that's where the whole thing started. I remember I was with this at the very beginning in the late 70s, early 80s, and all those craft brewers today were all homebrewers back then.
Right,
so
right.
That's really the nuts and bolts of the whole thing comes from the homebrew world, and I think that the success of the craft brewers is heavily dependent on the success of the homebrew world.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
So,
now,
yeah.
I know there's a lot of factors involved in the shortage, and you've certainly mentioned a couple of them, currency issues.
Yes.
It seems to me, though, like a lot of these factors could have been planned for, and then I think there are factors that could not have been planned for, like ruined crops and people all of a sudden getting paid to grow something else instead of hops. They get a lot more money, things like that. So can you is there one or two really big factors that kind of caught you guys by surprise that put us in this situation?
there was, it wasn't, I won't say it was totally by surprise, but the severity of it was by, that caught everybody by surprise. I saw this shortage coming years ago, 3 or 4 years ago I saw it coming. And I remember telling brewers and stuff, be ready, there's going to be a shortage.
Okay.
And there's going to be a difficult market correction. And part of that was at the time when prices were going very cheap, too. A lot of people were out there, there's a lot of excess hops. Well, that really was the cause. What happened, and it's real, real simple. If you look at acreage, there's a real simple one, and I did a thing on the Power Hour. If you go at our peak acreage, now worldwide again, don't look at U.S. acres, our peak in 92, so that's what, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Was 236,000 acres.
Okay.
That's an important number.
All right.
I'm just going to give you a couple other quick numbers. In 2006, which was our low point, we were 113,000 acres.
Okay.
236, 113.
Yeah.
Less than half.
Yeah.
In about a 14-year period. Why did that happen?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Real simple. There was in 92, that was way too many acres in the world. So what happened to those excess hops? There's a lot of excess that were produced. Didn't go to the dump. Some people think, well, they must have got rid of it. No. Most of it in the form of extract, some of it in the form of pellets.
Mm-hmm.
But extract is an extremely stable commodity.
Yeah.
The world buys, we're talking about the whole, the bigger breweries and this and that. Extract is a big way that brewers buy hops.
Okay.
Brewers started buying that excess down the road. All of a sudden, there was hops that were 3, 4, 5, 6 years old in extract form that was selling very cheap into the marketplace. What that was causing, though, unfortunately, great deal for the brewer at the time, it was forcing growers out of business. That's why the acres went from 236 to 113. Where do you think those acres went to? They went into other crops.
Mm-hmm.
Here they went into some housing developments. They went into distribution centers, strip malls, whatever you want to say.
Strip
it went
hops.
Out of hops. And this is that's a world acreage, and it's real important to understand 113,000 acres isn't very many hops anyway, is it? It's pretty specialized. Anyway, the bottom line is about 4 or 5 years ago, I'm looking at the numbers, because see, they're coming down. It didn't go from 236 to 113. It's down about 10,000 every year on the way down.
Really?
I'm saying, this is getting kind of critical in my mind. Well, and it was. But what kept the market depressed was all the excess inventory kept selling in. Now comes 2007. It really kind of started in 06 a little bit in the spring here, but the 07 crop, all of a sudden some of these major breweries that bought these spot extract and extra hops went to the dealer to buy them, and the dealer says, I don't have any more.
Okay.
Uh-oh. You got brewers that now in panic mode.
Yeah.
We don't have hops. We got to have hops.
Yeah.
We'll pay anything for these hops.
That's
what started. Now, to amplify, you said there's a couple things. To amplify the perfect storm, our crop worldwide wasn't very good.
Okay.
Whoa. We could have had a bumper crop and we'd still have a problem.
We had
a poor crop.
Right.
Last thing we needed.
Right.
So between all of that hitting together, that's where the shortage has come from.
Okay.
And it's been coming on for a number of years.
Okay. See, and that's what I thought, and you see questions, a lot of homebrewers have questions, and a lot of the critics out there are saying, how did you not see this coming? It's unbelievable that we're stuck here because you should have seen it coming. And
a lot of people saw it, they just didn't seem it would be this severe.
Yeah, okay.
This is what's caught everybody.
Yeah.
And that's really the crucial thing. It's not that it wasn't coming, because the acres kept going down, and there's a point where you go, man, there's not enough acres out there. But the prices kept depressed because of this excess. Now, I don't sell to that market very much, so I'm more of an outside guy looking at it, but I'm aware of it all.
Okay.
So I saw that, and I'm thinking, man, this is a tough deal. Now, here's the next part that's real hard for the home brewer to understand, but it's a really important number, is what goes into extracts, mainly? High alpha hops.
Okay.
Not aroma hops. the home brewer, the craft brewer, everybody wants to use aroma hops.
Yeah.
So what's the hop that has all the that these big brewers are looking for? High alpha hops.
Check sauce.
Who's paying the big money?
Right.
For hops, it's high alpha. So we call them a lot. The biggest one we have here is called we call them CTZ or Columbus Tomahawk Zeus.
Okay.
There's some other ones that would be in there. You'd have Millennium. You know, you'd have Nugget, Galena. All these would be high alphas. But those are being paid a premium.
I see.
The problem, now here's where the real problem comes in. Okay, let's use an example. And this will be a simple one, but I'm going to put this out. Say the grower's getting paid today, and this would be pretty high, and we'll even take it down a notch here in a minute, but he's being paid right now $20 a pound easy.
Yeah.
For his high alpha hop. That hop produces about 3,000 pounds an acre. Real important number.
Okay.
Okay? 3,000 pounds times $20 is $60,000 an acre.
Wow.
That's huge money.
Yeah, that's okay? Great.
But this isn't the point I'm trying to make. Let's just take that number. Now let's take a Cascade, very popular hop, the most popular hop in the craft world and probably the homebrew world.
Okay.
That only produces about 2,000 pounds an acre.
All right.
To get $60,000 gross return. Remember, a grower thinks on gross return per acre.
Okay.
Okay. Now he's got $60,000 coming at his $20 for the high alpha. On a 2,000 pound, he's going to have to get $30 a pound to get $60,000. Now let's take it one step further. Let's take a hop like a Hallertau or Tetnang.
Yeah.
That's about a 1,000 pound yield per acre.
Wow.
Wow. $60,000 at a 1,000 pounds per acre is $60.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
See, there's now you're starting to see the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now let's take these high alphas and let's bring them down a big notch. Let's go down to $10.
Okay.
That's still at 3,000 an acre, 30,000. That would still be for a 2,000 pound Cascade, $15, and it would still be $30 for a Hallertau.
Yeah.
There's our problems.
Okay.
So what we're going to see down the road, what do you think growers are putting in? I see there's about 5,000 acres going in for sure in the U.S.
New acres, you're saying?
Next year. Okay. New acres.
Okay.
All high alpha.
Okay.
But you know what? There's really about, and this is just kind of a don't take this number too hard, but an example. Take it as an example. There's probably 6,000 to 7,000 acres of high alpha really going in.
Okay.
So he just said there's only 5,000 new acres going in, which is going to be high alpha. Now he just said 6,000 to 7,000. What does that mean?
Yeah. Whoa,
that means that there's 1,000 to 2,000 more aromas going out.
Okay.
To make that difference.
I see.
Now we see an increase in aroma hops demand from the craft world, homebrew world, that's probably going up at 15-20%, but we're seeing a decrease in acres.
Yeah, what a mess.
There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah,
that's the problem. Though we're aware of it, I'm telling you that, I can't go out and pay that much for a Hallertau.
Yeah.
So what I see going to happen down the road is I see some of those lower yielding aroma hops are probably going to be disappearing.
Entirely?
Entirely, yes.
Wow, okay.
I think that there will be some hops that are a little better yielding that will do well. You got to remember with hops, it's not just the yield, but it is disease resistance, things like that. You know, picking time, hops have a small window of picking. So one of the advantages we probably have with aroma hops is they're generally earlier picked hops. But there's definitely no advantage on that gross per acre return.
Okay. Wow.
And that's what's killing us. And you know what? You can say you saw it coming, you this or that. Bottom line, what are you going to do about it?
Sure.
There's nothing.
No, you can't.
We are stuck until that high alpha market comes back down to a more reasonable level. Then we got some room to manipulate. At this point, where I see the future, and I'm just rattling here for a little bit, but
All right.
Helps everybody here.
Yeah, you do it.
I see the future. Aroma hops are going to continue to be very difficult to find. U.S. aroma, let's put it that way.
Okay.
I think that what will be the hop that's going to be available down the road to home brewers, craft brewers, anybody, if anything, it'll be high alpha hops because that's what's being grown. Not saying there won't be some, but that's where all the new acres is going to. The other place that I'm working on that maybe we can get some more aroma hops will be from Europe. and I am working on that now. I do have some bought. I bought some European hops. Now I got them bought through 2011, 2012.
Wow!
But I'll guarantee you, they're not cheap.
And what are you talking about?
Euro being so strong, it's killing me.
Are you talking about noble hops or English hops? When you say European hops, what are you talking about?
Okay, let's talk about European. Let's talk about those. That's a good question,
okay.
By the way.
All right. That's weird.
We're talking about this 113,000 acres. Now, in 07, it's about 118,000. Okay, you talk about England as a classic. Because if you take England, you know, everyone thinks that's a big hop-producing country.
Yeah.
In the U.S., we're about 33,000 acres. Germany's about 42,000 acres. England is 2,400.
Wow. Nothing.
Nothing.
Compared, yeah.
We got hop growers here that size. Okay?
Yeah, okay. Just right there in Washington.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So England is, that's why people wonder why they can't get some English hops. It's because they're almost gone. Now, have they always been that way? No. You go back to 78, they were 17,000 acres. You go back 100 years ago, they were 55,000 acres. They used to be a major world player. But anymore, they're a minor player.
Okay.
So where are those hops going to come from? Number one place, if you get them, is Germany.
Okay.
Number two place, which is the next biggest growing area over there, might be the Czech Republic. But, boy, it's a hard area to deal with.
Really?
Well, they had a poor crop this year. They were about 30% down in their yield. People are screaming for money. They actually went so far, some of the growers there went to dealers and said, if you're going to get our hops, we're going to renegotiate our contracts.
Wow.
Very difficult people to, I don't want to sound bad on them, but they can be difficult to work
Ralph
with.
Ralph hates the checks. I can tell.
Yeah. Yes.
Especially the ones that bounce. Oh!
Let's just say when I was over at the Brow in Germany, I think they were ready to attack.
Really? Wow.
I mean, they're just going because they really got shorted over there.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, the Czech Republic, the Slovenes, the Poland, those are some other areas. They all had pretty poor crops.
Okay.
But I'd still say in the future that's going to be a source of hops. So from Germany, you're going to have some Hallertau and Spalt and stuff, but not very many of those. How come? Because those are low-yielding hops and are going out of favor. Ones you're going to get are going to be Spalt Select, German Tradition, which is a Hallertau. You're going to get other types.
Okay.
And the Hallertau, in fact, is actually dying over there, so it has verticillium wilt. So I don't know how long it's even going to stay.
Really?
Yeah.
See, this is stuff we have no idea about. I thought, to me, when I think of the noble hops, I think of something that will be around forever, because it seems like they have been, and they're just so amazing hops. When you say things like that's terrible.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me talk to you about price for a
second. So Germany's changing pretty rapidly, too. So, yeah, people need to know that.
Okay.
And if you have a lower-yielding hop that's not doing very well, growers don't want to grow stuff that doesn't do well. And if they don't get paid very well on top of it.
Sure, of course.
They want to be paid a decent price and have a good yield, and guess what? The combination is great.
Right. See, that's the only people I'm thinking right now, aside from those who got hurt with the bad crop year, or 2 years even.
Yes.
The growers that have stuck this out are actually doing really well right now. I mean, they're now getting a premium for their commodity. And this is what I want to ask you about with the price, because in some ways, I don't have a problem all of a sudden that now hop growers are getting a premium for their product, because for years, hops went for pennies, and maybe part of the reason why people didn't grow more hops. So I have two questions for you. The first thing is, I've said on this show a couple of times now that I believe hop prices will never go back to what they have been. This is the new reality.
That is correct.
Okay. So now maybe they won't stay at $20, $30 a pound, but they will never be what they have been for years now.
That's the way I see it. If they stay where they were, what that caused was growers to go out. Again, I'll say the acres, 236 to 113. That doesn't just mean that the guys pulled in. That means a lot of guys got out of the business.
Okay, yeah.
They're gone and never going to come back.
Right. Yeah, of course.
And that's the difficulty that people don't understand. If we go back to those prices again, we'll see another big exodus.
Okay.
And then we're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now let me ask you this. Now, I know that compared to what we were paying for hops, $20 and $30 a pound is a lot of money, all right, relative to that. But
I got to tell you one interesting thing, and I'm going to let you ask the question.
Yeah,
I
go
heard
ahead.
Some prices. I heard in Europe somebody just paid $50.
$50 for a pound.
I just want you to know. It's incredible.
But here's what is that really, is $20 a pound, is it really a lot of money? I mean, relative to what it was before, it's obviously a big increase. But if a craft brewer is putting 5 pounds of hops into a beer, I don't know, is that even accurate? How much is it, if they're using 5 pounds on a low hop beer, for what they're going to get for selling that beer, is $20 a pound really a ton of money?
They can survive with that. I think what's killing a lot of the craft brewers is it's not just the hops, it's the malt, it's the stainless, it's the glass, there's a lot of things.
Yeah.
But no, they probably can, but it's not going to stay that high.
Okay.
But it's going to stay up. The thing you got to remember also, though, you got these high prices. Now, most of the inventory was already sold at cheaper prices even this year.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like this market. See, that's the part that a lot of people don't understand. It's not like everybody made all that money. It's, in fact, a lot of the growers didn't even get to participate in this. Why not? Because they were, say, sold at 90%, and they were hoping to have an extra 10% or so, 15%. Well, their crop only came in about 85%.
I see.
See, so a lot of them haven't even been able to take advantage of the prices. The few that were, it's only a small portion.
Okay. All right. Let's people, of course, certainly homebrewers, craft brewers too, they want to know what is available. And you've already talked about the high alpha versus aroma. How about new varieties? I mean, people are telling us, use this as a chance to experiment with new hop varieties. So what does that scene look like? Are there new things?
Well, okay. There are some new hops and stuff, but I got to tell you, I have a new motto.
All right. I'm ready.
When people keep asking me about wanting to use a particular hop and this and that, I eventually come back to them. I say, do you want to brew beer with hops or not?
No.
It's an important one to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
And I'm just being hard ass about it, but that's the way it is. There's a point where some hops just plain aren't available.
Okay.
And if you have something, it's going to brew good beer. And I think what we're going to see with some of the new hops or hops that people are using that they haven't historically used is they're going to go, wow, this didn't do too bad. This made a pretty decent beer.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to see. Now, for some new varieties, there's some new ones that are coming out and trying. I think the bottom line, if you were a home brewer out there today buying hops, you look and see what's available. You talk to your homebrew store is buy what's available. Again, it comes back to that motto.
Sure.
And even though there's some new varieties, there's not a whole lot of some of those. It'll help, but it's not necessarily the catch-all at any given moment. The other thing you got to keep in mind, I think this shortage is going to be a couple of years, and then we're going to start seeing a turn. And there's a lot of acres going in this year, and luckily a lot of this high alpha hops will produce the first year.
Oh, they do.
There's a lot of other hops around the world that take 2 years to get production.
Okay, that's a question that came through from the listeners, actually, is how long before these fields are viable?
That's one of the problems, so... a lot of it depends on the given year, temperatures and this and that. Some hops will do better than others, but a lot of times it'll take 2 to 3 years. The good part is a lot of these high alphas will start coming on in 1 year. They're a pretty aggressive growing plant, and that'll actually be a positive because then we can start filling this big void with some of these major international breweries, and then that'll take some of the pressure off.
Is your company part of the process that figures out if that crop is viable? Do they send things to you and say, this is our first year we've grown this hop. Can you analyze it and tell us if it's any good?
What we do is some of my partners they actually have a program for developing new varieties.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually involved in that a little bit.
Okay.
And what the problem with new varieties is it takes quite a while. You have to be careful. Something will look really good today, you know, in about 2 or 3 years from now will look terrible. You know, they don't always hold up like you think. So the process takes about 8 to 10 years to really know if a hop is going to move on. And in an experiment program where you're doing, say, mass selection, you might have 50,000 varieties in theory or crosses that you've pollinated the seed to get the seed. You might get out of the 50,000, maybe you get five.
Gotcha.
Commercial. So there's a big selection process that takes place.
Okay.
And you have to be real careful. And again, it comes down to a number of things on selection, and we could spend a whole talk on breeding programs, and that's something I do like to talk about. But
yeah, I like talking about breeding too.
I like talking. Yeah, maybe we'll just talk about breeding. How about it?
Let's forget about these hops.
No, a couple of real quick ones on it is the hop has to have a yield. If it doesn't yield anything, again, we're talking like some of these other hops. It has to have some alpha. It has to have some storage.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be disease resistant. There's a lot of factors that it has to go through, see. And so a lot of hops that come out, even some that come out and become to a point where there's some acreage, commercial acreage that goes in, doesn't necessarily guarantee the success down the road. They might go 2 or 3 years and something pops up that makes it not so viable.
Yeah, see, that's risky stuff, man.
Very.
I would not want to be a. Yeah, exactly. I would not want to be a hop farmer in that situation, trying to experiment with new strains. You know, that's tough. Hey, someone was asking in terms of these. You know, you're talking about high alpha hops that are going to be available.
Yes.
And then sort of talking about these, you know, new strains coming out too. What are some of the alpha acids when you're talking about high alpha hops that we can look for? Specifically, somebody asked, is there anything like a 20% AA hop coming out? I mean, that's huge, I know, but you seeing anything like that?
That is huge. There have been a few hops that have hit that.
Okay.
But that's only been not on a regular basis, just certain fields have gotten up there. Normally, they're not quite that high. And the reason for the high alpha hops, again, it's high alpha in yield,
what
comes into pounds or kilos of alpha, which goes into extract.
Okay.
And again, that's why people will look for the highness. But I think you could hit 20%, and I've seen a few come in close to that, but that's awful, awful high.
Okay.
And typically, most high alphas tend to be anywhere, I consider, from 10 to 15%.
15, okay. All right.
Yeah, and that would be considered high.
Here's another question that came through that I thought was a good one, because we've talked about American and European hops. What about New Zealand hops? Is that something
you guys... That's a great question.
Okay.
Let's look at that one real... Let's throw in Australia, too.
Yeah.
Because they grow hops. You know, we always hear about them.
Those criminals.
And we hear about the New Zealand Hallertau, the organic hops and all this and that. Pretty international, pretty big thing.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, let's make that one real. There's one grower in New Zealand that grows organic hops.
Just one?
So, yeah.
Okay.
Now, we talked about the 33,000 acres in the U.S. and the 43 in Germany, this and that.
Yeah.
New Zealand, less than 1,000 acres. Australia, less than 1,000 acres. Combined, they're smaller than the UK.
I see. Okay. So it's a
So now let's really get real. And not saying they're not bad, because I sell New Zealand hops and some Australian hops, but you're talking, again, very small acreage.
Okay.
If you take 118,000 acres in the world today, less than 1,000 in each of those countries, they make up about 1.5% of the world supply.
Okay. Wow. Just a tiny part of the equation.
And that's what people have to understand.
Yeah.
You know, that a lot of these places and things they hear and all the good stuff, that's called, to me, that's reality. That's called a hard number.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You said hard.
Yeah.
All right.
So we're back at breeding now, I see.
Yes. JP always gets us back to breeding.
I heard something in the background. Yeah. I had a figure.
And in a room full of guys, it's a weird subject to touch on twice.
It is.
Okay. Specifically, everyone wants to know, so you're going to have to name some things. What is available? What are we going to be able to find over the next year or so?
I think that there's going to be a couple of varieties that will be available. The one that I've been able to buy, obviously, here and sell some out have been the Columbus. The reason is because that's some of the spots that are available. I think there'll be some high alpha hops, a few of those available. I think there's going to be, I know I've bought some European hops, so I think we're going to see a little more of things like the Tradition and Select will become available. I think there may be a few, because we kept some out there, a few Sterling and Glacier. It's going to be really hard because I'll be real honest with you.
Yeah.
I feel like Jesus and the fish a little bit, you know, at times.
Yeah.
Because I got all these people wanting the hops and I only got so many.
Yeah, you got
to spread it out. Really, it's a good question, but I don't have a great answer for it.
Hey, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Actually.
But I'm hoping to find more hops. I'm looking for that mother load that's being hidden out there, see?
You got to find it, Ralph. I have faith in you.
Another thing that we're selling a little bit more of, which is kind of taking that a little bit further too, we are selling a little bit more in the way of extracts and oils. It's still hard to get extracts, but there are some of that, and there are some hop oils. And from a craft brew standpoint, there's more and more interest in that.
Sure, you got to make the switch to what's available.
That's there you go. Yeah. And of course, there's some downstream products, some like we call isohop isomerized extract. One that has a high utilization. So there may be a bigger usage of some of those kind of products down the road rather than just pellets and whole hops.
Okay.
Well, I was wondering if you knew this was coming for the last couple of years. Why don't you have the mother load hidden off somewhere?
Yeah, you got to have some stash, don't you, Ralph?
I may have that mother load hidden somewhere.
Just holding out.
Yeah.
You said load.
Yeah.
I was talking to Ralph. We did a pre-interview before the show, and cool thing about like he was just saying here, cool thing about Ralph is he's just real honest about it. I told him that we're going to want to know how to substitute hops, right? So there's these hops, so what can we use as substitutes? And I'll let you take it, Ralph. But I thought it was real interesting. He said, I'll talk about that, but he's real practical about substitutions and that just hops aren't the same. So go ahead and talk about it.
Here's the hard part about substitutions is normally when you have a lot of varieties around, you can say, oh, well, substitute this for that and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
The difficulty we have is there's so many varieties that are not around. So even what would be a normal substitution for something just doesn't fit in. I will say one thing. If you look at our website,
hopunion.com.
Under that www.hopunion, which I never update, by the way, so don't worry about that.
Okay.
But if you go into, we have our varietal data booklet area. There's a place where you can look at varieties. And if you look down on that list on each variety, there is a place down there that talks about substitutions.
Oh, great.
That would make sense. So for people later on that just want to look at that, they can get in there and you can find that. Once you see that, you can kind of see. There's a thing down below that says what hops go for what beer styles, but also what hops are good to substitute for others. But when you take even that whole thing into context, if none of those others are available, what do you do? Well, guess what? Again, it comes back to my motto, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
do you want to make beer?
Bottom line. And I think what people will find is if they use hops, may not make the beer exactly how they want it, and yeah, it's unfortunate, but you know, all hops could help make some great beers. And I think people have to keep, and you talk about substitutions, probably the thing I'd talk to them about is just keep an open mind, enjoy brewing, and know that maybe, here's the other thing that I would tell a person, is it may not be available today, but maybe next month or whatever. And that would be like, you know, we work with you guys a little bit. Stuff comes up all the time. So all of a sudden, maybe there is a few of a particular hop that someone's looking for.
Right.
But I it's going to be quite difficult.
Okay.
It really is. I don't have a great answer for it other than keep that open mind.
Yeah.
Do it.
Every time I hand somebody one of my homebrews, I tell them to keep an open mind. So this works for me.
Yeah.
I have some good questions that come through from the chat for you.
Sure.
Has anyone synthesized alpha acid? So I thought that was a good question.
Yes.
So not hop extract, but just a completely synthesized alpha acid.
There's been work on it, and I think it in some ways could be done, but it's not practical from a cost standpoint.
Okay.
It has been discussed. It just has never been a big concern. Part of the reason why you wouldn't look at it is because prices have been so low.
Right.
You know, why do it? You know, in fact, we were the problem with the industry is they were looking for other things to go into. So they've been using hops as a like in sugar refinement to act as a antibacterial.
Yeah.
You know, I got some that I do for a person that goes into chicken feed. It's called Pea Maker. It's a zero alpha hop. It's again helps to keep chickens healthy, for example. You know, people were looking for all this other stuff to use hops in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why would you want to go try to synthesize it? You know.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know what? The question might be one that someone's working on now.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm thinking. Is you start to see a market, you go, you know, somebody's light bulb blows
yeah.
up. I have a question.
I've talked about it and it's been discussed, but there has been nothing. There's also they've talked about not synthesizing just the. Now, I assume the question is more on the alpha acids or the resins.
Yeah.
But they've also talked about, you know, doing something similar to the hop oil.
Okay.
Which is, of course, used in the finish. So that's been another aspect that's looked at. But
if you're one of the guys, one of your partners, one of your good friend of ours, too, Ralph Woodall. If Ralph Woodall stopped buying all of that hop liqueur and distributing it at every festival, would there not be a hop shortage?
Yeah, I want one, please.
That's what I'm thinking.
Well, actually, that's my stuff.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I love seeing
and
you guys at festivals. Because you've always...
I'm a little hard to let that out too often.
I know. It's always... Every time I get a little shot, I get the top secret speech. And guess what? I just told everybody about it. all right, more questions from the chat here. Obviously, homebrewers are starting to think about growing their own hops more and more now that this has come up. So someone had asked, what is the status of the rhizome crop this year?
Oh, that'll be good. There'll be rhizomes available.
Okay.
And I think that's not a bad... Actually, they're pretty nice to have in the yard anyway. I have about five or six.
Okay.
And I think they're nice just to have. They're a little difficult to just grow and use all the time, but especially for some fresh hops and a source of some, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Rhizomes are normally available come around March or April of any given year.
Okay. And then in terms of growing our own, someone asked, what kind of alpha acids can we expect? Are we going to grow the same strength of hops as commercial growers? Or, you know, does that just depend on how we treat them?
It really depends on a lot of things, the soil conditions, how you treat them, where you're located. Hops take a lot of nutrition in the form of fertilization. Well, not, but if you over-fertilize too much, you get a lot of oomph with nothing in it. So even around here, there's fields that will have different chemical concentrations.
Right.
But the main thing is to... I think to grow them, take an average, kind of think about it. You could always be a little over-aggressive. What's that going to hurt to put an extra 10% in or so?
Sure.
It'd probably be fine. It's a little bit of you know, people don't know. I actually got some people that will send samples in for me to analyze, and I'll actually do that. We charge a fee for it, but it's really, unless someone is looking at it pretty serious, you know, it's like $35. It's a lot of money for if someone has a plant.
Right.
They're really curious. Some people are. We have done that. I will say that.
Okay. Yeah, I think
and
you mentioned
you know,
that when you were on with us last time, too.
The biggest thing that people probably do is pick sometimes the hops maybe before they're mature or when they're over mature. And you want to get them when the cone starts getting a little rattly. And it's like a leaf on a tree. Once it starts drying out, that's about the time to pick it.
Okay.
Typically, for us, we'll start picking hops around the 21st of August up through September.
Okay.
But that's a big factor. You know, you could have a normal alpha, but if you picked it about 2 weeks early, you might lose a third or more of it.
Wow, that's a lot. Even at two weeks early, a third of it.
Yeah, two or three weeks. Oh, yeah. But you got to remember, okay, there, some of these hops we're actually going to be picking, and let's take that August. A lot of the hops, you know, they really go from their vegetative stage to their fruitation stage or the bloom stage based on day length, and it's when the day starts getting shorter. Well, the day starts getting shorter around June 21, so it'll start reacting around the first part of July. A lot of hops will go into their bloom. So they're going into bloom the first part of July. We're picking them in the third week of August.
Okay, yeah.
See, not a lot of time.
No, that's right. It's a small window.
When you think about that part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone asked in the chat room, he said, so can I get rich quick by starting a hop farm right now? Is this the time to jump in?
Yeah. The problem is with a hop farm, it, like I say, the bottom line is most people have gotten out of it.
Right.
The problem that people don't understand is it's a commercial venture. Most hop farms, the average size farm here now is 500 acres. To put in a commercial hop picker, if you were to put in new stuff today, commercial hop picker and dryers and all stuff, it'd probably be about $5-6 million.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you could get rich quick, but you're probably going to get rich. Someone else is going to get rich off of your money.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an expensive ordeal. And yeah, right now it's good, but it's only going to go a few years. But
okay,
I'm sure in the next year we're going to have more and more people want to do it. The bottom line is it's not as easy as it sounds.
Right. You know, just go throwing a bunch of seeds in the dirt.
Yeah. In fact, if you throw seeds in, they're all different.
Yeah.
You got to do root cuttings is the only way to.
Got
to
do the rhizomes.
But to get them dried, here's some. I'm not going to go because I could spend 2 hours on this subject too. This is unfortunate. So, but just to throw a few things in to the guy that would ask that question. Okay, we have state regulations on what can be used for pesticides, insecticides, and in federal. And we have people that are working that. We have fieldmen that are working, walking the fields on a daily basis to see how the bug populations and things are doing. Just that infrastructure alone,
right,
an individual wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you got the next part. Okay, you're going to have them out there. How are you going to pick them? You got to have a picker, see? That's a big... A downhower picker is going to be just the machine laying on the ground delivered to you. It'll be $1 million.
Wow.
If you're going to do a big one. Now, you can do smaller ones. There's some woof pickers and stuff. But still, you got to dry them and everything. Then you got the issue of where are you going to get them in the cold? See, that's why all the hops are kind of where I'm at, because we have the cold storage, we have the pelletizing, we have the extraction operations.
Right.
These are multi-million-dollar operations. That take care of those hops from the farmer. So there's another part to the story there.
I think
anyway,
our producer Chad could do all that. I think producer
there
Chad could walk around looking at bugs. He could do all the picking. And Doc could run the machinery. I think we could do this, fellas.
Okay.
If you want to try it,
let's do it.
I could sell you the rhizomes.
Perfect. this is an interesting question. Somebody asked if there are any hops that can be harvested twice in 1 year.
You know, I saw a thing where someone had put that on a posting somewhere, and I think I saw it on the Pro Brewer forum, and it was someone said that they could do two. That I've never heard or seen that.
Okay.
They're once a year. They got to go into a dormancy and whatnot.
Yeah.
And if there is some, that just doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't know of any commercial varieties that do that. Whether somebody got a variety to bloom twice, I could be, but... They do have to go through a cycle, and they're used to a yearly cycle.
Okay. Let's see. A couple others. I just want to get through all the listener questions for you.
Sure.
Here's a good one. People want to know if the public can buy Hop Union T-shirts. Can we get shirts from you guys?
You know, I thought about that, and I haven't done. I almost wanted to do it as a side company thing.
Yeah.
Because there are people that want to do that, Boy, I don't know quite how we want to set that up, but we could try to set something. Maybe I should work some down to you since you're there.
Yeah.
If someone sends you a request, then we can take it from there.
Do a little co-op.
Does that person have their name?
I could probably find out, but I could have people just contact me. Maybe we could do a co-op. Maybe we should do a small run of them for you.
Maybe we could do a small run. I have some. We typically, what we do with our stuff is we give them to, like, homebrew club for their brew fest, you know, their competitions and whatnot. We've done that. We give them to craft brewers. I don't normally sell them. That's
okay.
The bottom line.
Doc, you'd like them. I've seen Ralph Woodall with tie-dye hop union shirts on. So right up your
popsicle
alley.
Popsicle from hell.
Yes. Exactly.
I need that.
Yeah, Doc likes that. Okay, here's I think maybe a kind of a last question.
Sure.
I know we're really hammering home this new variety thing, but it's really what the homebrewers are curious about. Can you name some specific hops that we're going to see in the next year or two that are new varieties?
And maybe give their characteristics, too.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, okay. I don't know how many new ones, because there'll be a few coming out, but one of them that is gaining quite a bit here would be the Palisade. That would be one.
Okay, I've heard of that one.
And that's one that's quite a few acres are going in. Pretty good. It has some Cascade-like tendencies to it. Maybe a little mellower than a Cascade.
Okay.
That would be definitely would be one. There's a couple of more private type varieties. Most of them that are coming out have been what you'd want to say is high alpha. And while the craft brewer world and home brewer world will be using some of those and are a recipient, again, you got to remember the main focus of why those are put out is the international market. And there's some called Apollo, there's Summit, there's a couple different varieties like that. They'd be possible, but I'll tell you, there are some, they're only numbers at this point, but there's about a half a dozen that I'm going to be working on, aroma varieties. And we're going to start, I wanted to get on that this fall, but I've been too busy trying to find hops.
Yeah.
We do have some samples of some of those, and we're going to evaluate them. If they work, it's going to be a couple of years before we have those in any quantity, but there'll be a few out there. And they will be ones that will be, they'll have some distinct personality. There's a couple of them that are kind of coming out of the program where the Simcoe came out of, for example, and Phantom.
Yeah.
They'll be similar to those. And that kind of a style.
Okay.
And aroma. So they're kind of aroma, but a little more in your face. I mean, a lot of aroma tend to be the citrusy, you know, floral type thing.
Yeah, exactly. I've not seen an aroma that's real different than that in a long time.
Yeah. Well, one that's been out, there's a couple that have been out for a little bit, but two newer ones that have been out a little more commercial in the last couple of years. One would be Glacier.
Okay.
Which is kind of a Fuggle Willamette type, so that'd be a little more earthy like. That'd be a good one. And another one that's been out for a few years that's kind of there that some guys may or may not have seen a whole lot would be like Sterling, would be one that's out there.
Okay, yeah.
And that's a new one. And that's a noble aroma, a Czech sauce type of aroma.
Yeah.
That's what it's been compared to. So those would be a couple new ones that are out. They've been out for a couple of years. People might say, well, I tried that 2 or 3 years ago. And then there's another guy listening tonight that will say, huh, what's that variety?
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I run into a lot. You talk to somebody, and one person knows about it and the other doesn't. But those are some of the newer ones that are out on a commercial basis.
Okay.
There's not too much else at this point.
I've got one.
There will be.
One last thing I'd like you to cover so that we can just really kind of nip this in the butt for everybody. There's a lot of fear-mongering going on out there. Everyone's worried. There won't be any new breweries that are able to open up because there's no hops available. All of our favorite beers are going to change because there's no hops available. Can you give me a synopsis of and kind of quell all the fears and the questions that everybody has just in general? What does this whole thing mean? And I just mean commercial beers right now.
Yes.
What does this mean?
I'll be real honest. I think it has a definite potential to change some of the beer styles available.
Okay.
I think that I don't know if we have to look at it as a fear, but, you know, I see certain variety or certain beer styles like IPA, double IPA, and some of these others. They may start to go in the background for a few years.
Okay.
Because of the price of hops and how much they have to use. So I think there is some, I mean, there's concern or whatever from people. I look at things a little different. I just see it as a fact of life. And while I do like an IPA, I also understand that there might be less of them available. I think there's always going to be somebody making them because they're going to see the opportunity and there's a demand for it.
Yeah.
I think some of the new breweries, it's going to be difficult. Yes, I don't think there's, I'm not going to belittle it and sound like everybody's going to have the hops.
Okay.
It's going to be a little bit of a battle. But if we get through, if we can get through next year, which I think next year could even be as tight or tighter than this year.
Okay.
We get through that, then I see it opening up.
Good.
And there's a chance. So we get about a two, and the problem is, when I talk about next year, that will be the 2008 crop, which we said is, again, August, September, right?
Right.
Well, remember, unfortunately, with the exception of that few little countries down under, which we just talked about their acres not being so big,
yeah,
that's going to have to last for a whole year for the next ones in.
Okay. Yeah.
So it could last in a 2009 pretty easy. The other difficulty I see happening, especially in the pellet world, which the craft brewer was probably about 80% pellets,
mm-hmm.
is we normally work with a carryover to sell. So even when a new year comes in, because I pelletize, it takes about 4 to 5 months to pelletize everything.
Really? Okay.
Yes, and people don't realize this. They think it'll be done in a day or two or something. I don't know where they. I mean, I do a lot. I have two shifts working right now.
Wow.
And I actually got a third shift because Yakima Chief is a partner. So I actually got three shifts going. Well, we can run 16,000 to 20,000 pounds in a shift, but I'm doing millions of pounds. So I'll just be real blunt.
Okay.
You do the math. It takes so many. Just my Cascade run, like I've heard people say, well, there's no Cascades. The Cascades are sold, unfortunately, but it'll take me a month just to run those.
Wow. All right. So
So I see that as a big problem coming up because I see down the road as pellets are being made, we're going to be going into some years with no carryover pellets.
Yeah, that's
it's going to be interesting times.
It is. I 2 years. What's 2 years? Come on, hang in there, everybody.
You can't go a couple hours without a beer, dude.
I know. All of a sudden, I have all this patience. It's fine.
Just be sure to keep plenty of them stored. Plenty of beer stored, you think.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking, look, the IPA and the double IPA, it's had its reign of terror for the last couple of years, right? It's every great empire must fall, Doc. And right now, it's the empire of the IPA.
Yes. That's awesome.
It's unfortunate because I do soon. Like them, too. But
yeah, absolutely.
I see some changes. I think that'll be a fact. Okay. No need trying to belittle it.
We'll be buying all our hops in the back alley.
Yeah.
Dude, I got some Cascades.
Hey, is there like a black market hop thing going on among the craft brewers? Are they?
There is some.
Really?
There is some. It's not huge, but there is some guys that have some extras they'll sell, and you can hear them going back and forth. And
someone shows up, they got a El Camino full of hops in the back.
Dude, I got some Cascade. Yeah. I gave it.
It's pretty wild.
You're a white boy. You like the Cascade.
It's only Mexicans that do the black market, apparently.
Maybe you're going to Mexican.
All right, Ralph. Well, listen, it's always a pleasure, and I appreciate you spending the time. I know you've had this conversation a million times over the last couple months. So thanks for getting it all cleared up.
You got it out to a million of our listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured out what the heck, let's do it. No, it's good. I mean, people need to be a little more aware, and it's the biggest, I guess, to summarize everything real quickly, as we talked about, you know, acres are down, there's a lot of hops that aren't available. The thing that people have to keep in mind, and even myself who's in the middle of it and everything, we don't know everything. We don't know what's all going on. We don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah, well.
I'm giving you the best information I can. But boy, it's a world market, and you know where some of these people are in the world. It's difficult.
Well, if you can't figure out everything and you don't have a crystal ball, I'm not inviting you back, Ralph.
Well,
this is it.
Nice knowing you.
Well, I appreciate the straightforwardness. I mean, that's what people want to hear. They don't want the nobody wants to be marketed. So it's good.
I won't do that. I'm not a good liar, so I might as well just tell it how it is.
I like that. That's great stuff. Yeah. Okay. Well, this will stick around in the archives. So for the next year or so, you can just say, "Well, go listen to it over there." You can stop answering all the phone calls. And just say, I talked about it for an hour. You can listen to all of the answers over there on the Brewing Network.
There you go. Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time. Some good questions, by the way.
Yeah, the listeners.
And I'm glad that you guys are taking this time to let all the other homebrewers be a little more aware of what's going on. It's important that knowledge is king.
Absolutely. And we're going to do the malt shortage next, too. We got Ian coming on, so we're covering all of it in one show.
Well, tell him hi for me. His wife just had a new baby, so.
Oh, is that right?
So.
What kind of baby would that be, Justin?
Ugly baby. They're always ugly.
I think it was Justin's baby.
Probably not. My viability is about the same as Roma hops.
He's very good. You'll get some good knowledge on the malt thing too from him. So
very good. That's what we want.
You guys have a good one, and I do have a dinner date I have to go to.
Very good. Hey, Rob, I do have one last question.
Sure.
What have you been drinking this whole time?
You know, I haven't been drinking anything, and it's kind of interesting. But I probably should have a shot of that one drink you talked, which is hop and coffee.
The hop liqueur.
It's very, and I do have. I'm down here by my computer, and if you understood my little world here, all I have to do is walk about 15 feet to my beer fridge.
Wonderful. Yeah,
so it's pretty easy.
Yeah,
but I've been a little ill. Not to tell everybody everything, but I've been a little off, and so I haven't been drinking much alcohol.
Well, you got to take care of yourself. I'm a little disappointed, but you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
All right.
It is. I went to Germany. I was ill. Not to go into all the details. Tough way to go. You know, you go over there, and in fact, I'll go into my garage right now since you made me shame myself in the cabinet.
There we go.
Oh, let's open the door. Let's see what's in here. Oh, there's all kinds of stuff in here.
Oh, good.
Oh, my
loaded with IPAs.
Gracious.
Yeah.
I actually do have
move these
some,
Cascade hops aside.
Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff.
Ralph has a nice little collection there.
I got this brick of Magnum I need to move. I mean, there it is right there.
Oh, here's a brand new bottle of that funny German drink.
Do you really? Did you pick up a new stash while you were over there in Germany?
No, I picked up a bottle. You know, it's hard to go through customs anymore.
Yeah.
You know, after 9/11, you know, things aren't as easy.
That's true.
What happened then?
It was like a new 7-Eleven.
Yeah,
it
was long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just importing and stuff. I mean, even hops, it's a lot more difficult to import stuff nowadays.
Really?
It's difficult, yeah, because, you know, they want to check everything, and of course it costs a lot of money to do that.
Yeah.
It used to be a lot easier to bring booze in and stuff.
Yeah, you used to be able to just put prostitutes in your carry-on. They didn't care.
You used to do all that stuff. Yes. It was easy.
Segmented or not.
Now, what a pain in the ass.
It really is.
They question everything.
Yeah.
Why is there
blood? I'm just saying, I just want to have a little booze. I just want to have a drink, you know. And
yeah, what's
a Cuban
wrong with
cigar.
That? You know, just. I don't want a whole lot of anything. Just give me.
Yeah.
Just let me have my stuff.
Not asking for much.
Yeah. It's all personal, man. It's only for personal use.
Of course.
Okay, right. I just opened the lid, so now.
Good. Now you're an
you
official.
You smell that? Oh, that's good. I just want you to know that smells good. There's some hops in this one.
Hey, Ralph, you're a jerk.
Yeah. All right,
that
my friend. Enjoy your beer, enjoy your dinner, and thanks again for spending this time with us.
Well, you guys take care and keep up the good work.
All right.
Ralph.
We'll talk to you soon, Ralph.
Bye now.
Cheers. Good guy. You can go to hopunion.com and find out everything you need to know about Hop Union. And he said, I think one of the coolest things was that they've got that chart on there that talks about substituting hops. So at least some recommendations.
There's a lot of these new hops that I've never heard of that. How do I use it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sort of like this.
Although I really like it was that he, you know, really wanted to say, It kind of sounded to me like I don't want to talk to you about substituting hops because there's no substitute. That's what the hop does. You're going to need to have an open mind about how that beer is going to be different. You can't make the same beer by throwing in another hop.
I just like to see how, you know, the BJCP starts going when people can't get these hops.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's different. Wrong hop aroma. Well, sorry, there's no of those.
What did you want me to do? Yeah. That's a good point. Nationals in 2008, 2009. Interesting how lenient those judges might have to be.
Well, I think the 2008 Nationals, you're going to have guys that have stockpiled.
Yeah, so they're going to be okay.
But, you know, the 2009, it's going to bleed over. It's going to be different.
Yeah. All right, I got to take a break because we got to get to Ian when we come back. So a real short break, and then Ian Ward from Brewer Supply Group. We're going to talk about the malt shortage as well. So covering all the bases that we can in one show. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Jameel John Palmer book, Brewing Classic Styles. If you've been waiting to get your autographed copy, that's it. They're out. They're gone.
Did you miss your chance for a signed copy of Brewing Classic Styles? Well, this holiday season, the Homebrew Book of the Year meets the Homebrew Book of the Decade. And they're both signed. That's right. Brewing Classic Styles by Jameel Zainasheff and John Palmer and How to Brew by John Palmer are available for a very limited time this Christmas in the Brewing Network store. How to Brew is the book for first-time brewers and brewing veterans alike. Brewing Classic Styles is your recipe roadmap to a award-winning beer with specifics on every beer style in the BJCP guidelines. This limited package is now the only way to buy a signed copy of these legendary home brewing Bibles. Get your package before this offer runs out, only at the Brewing Network store, your home brewing home for the holidays.
I stumbled into a am all drunk and full of smoke. My wife said I have had enough, that said I'm sick, get out! So I stumbled down to Kelly's pub. Across the edge of town, and I told the boys my story, and we had another round. She was a pretty whore. She'd always greet you with a smile and never lock her door. But on the day she died, I'll admit it sounded weak. For Mary McGregor finally got some sleep.
You can not only order from More Beer online at morebeer.com and receive free shipping on most orders over $59, but you can also shop in person at their two retail locations located in Concord and Riverside, California. In fact, the Concord facility has grown to over 15,000 square feet to fit all the new products, expanded showroom, and new Knowledge Center classroom. And now, in conjunction with the Brewing Network, More Beer is making it easier than ever to keep up on what's happening. Download the More Beer monthly podcast podcast by clicking podcast at morebeer.com. You'll learn about More Beer's history, sales and discounts on More Beer products, get to know team members, and hear ways to save you money. They're also launching a brand new website soon with more features and a better online shopping experience. So go to morebeer.com or call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to The Brewing Network.
The Brewing Network, saving your life.
One beer at a time.
All right, back in action here on the session. Lots and lots of info going out today. Just got done with Ralph Olson from Hop Union. You can go to hopunion.com and check out all the information you need to find out there. And he talked to us all about the hop shortage that's going on. Cleared up a lot of myths, I thought. A lot of good information coming out of him there. So that was very cool. And now we've got Ian Ward, who's the president of Brewer Supply Group here. And he's going to talk to us about the malt shortage, too. Ian, are you with us?
Yeah, hi, Justin.
There you are. Great to have you on the show. I appreciate you taking the time.
No problem.
And have you got a beer in front of you? That's the most important
thing. I have. I've just gone out and poured myself a Sierra Nevada.
Very good.
Very good.
All right.
Yeah. So I figured I'd better do that, huh?
Now, Ian's from our neck of the woods. He's up here in Napa, and Brewer Supply Group, of course, one of the largest supply companies, I think, in the world, actually, in terms of brewer supply, and a real expert on the malt situation. He's originally a chemist by trade. Is that right, Ian?
That's right, yeah.
And now the president of Brewer Supply.
Mm-hmm, for my sins, yes.
Right.
So, yeah, I started off doing chemistry and then moved into organic chemistry, and then from then into the brewing industry for Isinglass and those kind of products, and then moved into a commercial role. So I don't get to do a lot of lab chemistry anymore at all, so
okay.
But now it's pretty much business.
All biz, no chemistry. Doc
no
would
chemistry.
Hate that. Doc likes the chemistry.
Got to have a little chemistry every day.
Yeah. Doc can't sleep at night without a little chemistry in his life. Well, hey, also, Ralph tells us a little congratulations is in order. You've got a new addition to the family.
Yes, we have. I hope he's not going to disturb us this evening. My wife's got him at the other end of the house, so hopefully he won't scream the place down. But
well, if he does, I'll mute him.
Okay.
Turn off his mic.
Congrats. How new of a baby are we talking here?
Thank you. He's 4 weeks old.
Wow.
So it's interesting. Ralph and I appeared on the BA Power Hour. He did his talk about hops, and I did one similar about malt.
Ah,
and,
right.
It was pretty tight because my wife was due on the 1st of November, and I kind of said, okay, I'll do this, but there's a proviso. If my wife goes into labor, I'm going to delegate it. And said, okay, that's fine. And I finished the talk, and 3 hours later, my wife went into labor. So
oh, no shit.
Very timely, and he's here. His name's Theo, and he's... Yeah, he's all right.
Wonderful. All right. Well, congratulations. That is good timing. That's pretty...
Thank you.
That sounds like Doc timing, too, right there. Yeah. Doc's like, yeah, I got this beer event to go to. I'll be home right about the time the baby's born.
Now, my motto is, I can do that, too.
Yeah.
I got a couple hours.
Do both. All right. Listeners, I want you to know that I've posted a PowerPoint presentation. It's a fantastic slideshow that Ian's put together, and it's on our forum. You can go to thebrewingnetwork.com/forum. Just hit the forum button on our homepage there. And right under the beer radio subject, you'll find the attachment. You just click on it. You can download it. Ian's been kind enough to let us distribute it to you folks. And you can kind of follow along with parts of the discussion that we're going to have today as Ian talks to us about... It's a worldwide thing, just like the hops, the malt shortage, and you can really follow along with that slideshow. So check it out in our forum, and you can also call us, 888-401-BEER, if you have any questions, or, of course, join JP in the chat room by hitting the chat now button and be able to ask questions that way. So get us started, Ian. Tell us, you know, how did this all begin, and what are we up against with the malt?
Well, really, as everybody knows, malt's made from barley, and it takes about 25 to 28% more barley than per pound of malt, because some of the weight of barley is consumed in the production of malt.
Okay.
So it's very dependent upon the agronomic product of barley, and really. Barley is a maritime climate plant and is grown, not a whole lot of it's grown in the United States. It really is a plant that's grown in, a lot of it's grown in Canada, a huge amount of it's grown in Europe, and then a little bit in Australia, in Russia, and surprisingly Turkey grows a fair amount.
Okay.
Most of the barley grown in the world, and in 2006-07 harvest, there was 134 million metric tons of barley grown.
Okay.
Most of it is used as animal feed. Not a huge amount goes into beer production, but or into malt production, but most of it's for animal feed. And interestingly, there are clearly some countries in the world that simply can't grow barley because either they don't have the land. And for example, Japan, it's a very mountainous country. Only a little bit's grown there. But there are some countries such as, say, Indonesia and Thailand, for example, or parts of Africa where it simply won't grow because the climate and soil doesn't permit it to be grown. So those areas tend to import it. So there's an international trade in malt, and because as I've said that you have 25% of the weight lost, barley tends to be traded for brewing purposes much less than malt, because otherwise you'd be moving more commodity around the world. So there really is a global trade in malt, and that global trade is dominated by Europe. About 55% of it comes from Europe, and then Canada contributes about 13%, 11% is Australia, and only around 5 to 6% is the United States. So we're not a huge producer, not a huge exporter or participant in the global malt trade. Most of the barley that's grown here in the United States are six row varieties, and they're heavily used by the large brewers.
Yeah.
And less used by the craft brewer and the home brewer. Because they don't have necessarily the brewing characteristics. They're very high in enzymes and very low in carbohydrate compared to a two row, for example.
Hence the ever popular Bud Light, low in carbs.
Indeed, it is. Yeah.
So is that to say that guys like Anheuser-Busch then? Do they have their own crop? I mean, are they growing a lot of their own stuff, or are they purchasing it?
They purchase it. Raw Malting, the company that owns Brewers Supply Group, is a very large supplier to Anheuser-Busch. There are four major maltsters in the United States. We're one of them, Raw Malting, and we're the only family-owned company. Cargill have a huge operation. United Malt Holdings, and you probably know of them as Great Western, and IMC. Which is now ADM. So there are four big companies, and then Breese will be the other company that people are familiar with, which is another smaller family-owned business, and they mainly produce specialty malts.
Okay.
So four big players in the whole of North America, and they will be supplying companies like Miller Anheuser-Busch. Coors have their own malting facility.
Okay.
They produce their own malt from barley, which of course they buy on the market. And they buy from growers, they will contract with growers.
Okay. So, for the most part, though, people aren't growing their own. They're certainly buying it from farmers.
From farmers. I mean, unlike hops, where there's a very small acreage, brewers clearly need a lot more malt in weight to make a barrel of beer than they would do hops. So, really, the things that are going on in the grain industry are really profoundly affecting what's going on in the malting industry and for the brewer. And what's happened over the last couple of years is a combination of three things. It has to be understood that this really is, as Ralph was saying, in hops, it's really a global industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens in one part of the world can affect what happens in another. And really what's led to the cost of malt is dependent really upon three things. It's dependent upon the price of barley, the price of energy to do the conversion, and really the availability of malt plant capacity. If malt capacity is tight, it's basically supply and demand. If the capacity is tight, the maltster can make more money. If there's a lot of excess capacity, the maltster doesn't make any money and the price of malt falls. But what's happened in the last couple of years is really the availability of good quality malting barley. Malting barley is desirable characteristics are to have very, very plump, big fat kernels, but lots of carbohydrate, lower enzymes, and really varieties that are found to give good flavor in malt and therefore present good flavor in beer.
Yeah.
And in order to control the level of nitrogen or the levels of enzymes, you don't want to use a lot of fertilizer. So in terms of yield coming off the field, and again this goes back to what Ralph was saying, a grower's interested in dollars per acre. That's what they're really interested in. And a malting quality barley will yield much less tons per acre than a feed variety, simply because you can fertilize a feed variety quite happily. You can use very resistant plants and very high yielding plants, whereas malting quality barley yields less, and so the maltsters pay a premium to the grower to get that product grown.
Okay.
In the first place. So what's happened in the last year, really, the story starts back in 2006. Two out of the three major growing regions, and the three regions, remember, are North America, mainly Canada, Australia, and Europe. Two out of the three regions had a disastrous harvest. In 2006 in Europe, everything was going okay, and it was a very dry year, but then the harvest starts in August, and with it being very, very dry, the grain was not only ripe, but bone dry. And in Central Europe, in Germany, in the Czech Republic, Poland, over the course of a couple of days, there was massive thunderstorms and a lot of rain. And that absolutely wet the crop, and you had something called pre-sprout damage. And on my presentation, there's a photograph of what happened. So it was people were expecting a modest year, but then when all this rain fell, it was about 4 inches of rain fell in 24 hours, you have something called pre-sprout damage. So the barley is standing up on its ear and gets wet, and then it sprouts. It sprouts on the ear, and there's a photograph of that. And about a million metric tons of malting quality barley was destroyed. And
wow.
In some parts of Germany, 75% of the crop was lost. And you can't even use it for animal feed. It's completely useless. A lot of maltsters had to turn to lesser quality barley simply to keep the doors open.
Okay.
So, that harvest happened in 2006, August 2006, and then in November, the Australian harvest started. In Australia, it's grown as a winter crop. There are two types of barley, a winter and a spring. A winter crop was planted in the late fall, and will overwinter and is harvested in the sort of early summer. A spring variety is planted in the spring and is harvested in the early fall or late summer.
Mm-hmm.
Spring varieties, you only find spring varieties in North America because the interior of the continent is so cold that you can't really grow the sort of the winter varieties. They tend to be grown in Australia and in Europe. A lot are grown in England. There's a lot of winter varieties in England.
Okay.
One that people will hear of is Maris Otter. That is quite
a
winter
very
variety.
Popular too.
Yeah. Yeah, very popular. Yeah. So those are the. So in Australia, it's a winter crop because it's too damn hot in the summer. But Australia, as probably people are aware, has been suffering from drought conditions for a number of years. And in 2006, instead of harvesting 9 million metric tons, only 4 was harvested. So these are pretty severe crop losses. And many Australian farmers just simply walked away from their fields, or they turned animals onto their field to get some value from the crop.
Wow.
So there, as a result of that, you had a price of... And typically, barley is quoted in euros. I will quote some prices in dollars. But the international trade, a lot of it happens in euros. So going into 2006, the futures are quoted in May of 2006 for harvest 2006 were around 120 euros per metric ton.
Okay.
By the time November came around, that figure had jumped to 210 euros a ton.
Wow.
On the news of this poor harvest. So really what started to drive this was a poor harvest in Europe, followed by another poor harvest in Australia. And then because all the bins were empty and Europe needed, and this is going into 2007, because Europe needed at least 14 months worth of barley to supply the malt industry,
mm-hmm.
and Australia the same, everybody needed to have an excellent harvest this year, and that's not what happened.
I see.
What happened is in Europe there was a strange climactic phenomena that happened called a Rossby wave. In Europe, the jet stream kind of swung down, and instead of bringing cold weather to Iceland, it brought very, very cold weather and rainy weather to England and France. And so April was really warm, unbelievably warm, and it was really the only summer month that England had. And then in May, the rain started to come down, and it was the wettest on record. There were major flooding in certainly in Britain, but also in France and Germany.
Yeah.
So it really was not an ideal growing season.
It's like the El Nino of Europe.
I was thinking, you know, so it's really like cold and rainy in England?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
More cold and rainy than usual.
I see.
Yeah, so really, again, volumes were down in Europe again. Europe this year is expected to be 335,000 metric tons short.
Okay.
Germany is way down, is a million down again. Denmark is not so bad this year. That had a good surplus. France has had a reasonable surplus. But a lot of the barley is damaged. A lot of it's... has an organism called Fusarium, which people will read about. It, you can't use it for malting. Fusarium generates an organism, a toxin called vomitoxin, and you can imagine what it does to you if you eat grain that's got Fusarium on it. Makes you sick.
I see.
You get beer gushing and all these kind of things. So the maltsters have got to be very, very selective about what barley they buy. And of course, the growers know this, and they knew that it was going to be a tight supply this year. So you saw the price this year. Thankfully, it's now peaked, but the price went topped out at about 320 euros a ton. So it made last year's look pretty cheap by comparison.
Yeah.
And the futures now for next year are around 270 euros a ton. And they are coming off a little bit because, you know, everybody's bought what they need for the entire year, so prices start to come down as farmers are looking for buyers. The price starts to creep down a little bit.
Yeah. I'm looking at your slide that is kind of the evolution of barley pricing up until 2006, and... what an amazing difference 2006 had.
Well, whilst you're looking at that chart, and if the listeners look at it as well, I think there's a couple of things to note of that. Yes, the steepness of the rise when that disaster happened in August,
uh-huh.
The price just shot up. But I think what I'd like to get people to look at, and it speaks to Ralph's point as well, is look at the price of barley in 1999 or in 2000. You look at the pink line there in 2000.
Yeah.
And then look at the blue line, the pale blue line in 2005.
Yeah.
Now, over the course of 5 years, and if we were to layer on, you know, 98 and 97 and 96, we'd see similar pricing. So the price of barley at the farm gate hasn't really changed much. And in fact, between 2000 and 2005, it had gone down. So the return to the grower, whose cost of diesel fuel's going up, cost of labor's going up, you know, all of these pressures on the grower, they've been making less money.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is, I think this is a, something that we really have. You know, there's been massive leverage against growers as yields, agronomic yields of all commodities have gone up. Growers have really suffered in terms of a reasonable return for their product, and also, you know, subsidies have skewed the markets as well.
Yeah.
And we now are in a situation where a lot of growers particularly in hops, have said, to hell with this. We can't make a living in this, and have left the farms. And the same is true of a lot of arable farmers as well. That really this had to change, and if it didn't change very quickly, then you know, people are simply not going to grow it.
Sure.
And that really is the case with malting barley, because it's got a lower yield. Unless the maltster's prepared to pay a little more, they're just simply going to grow. Going to grow other crops.
Yeah. Well, see, this is the portion of the crisis that it just makes the most sense to me. But I was talking about it with hops too. I mean, why shouldn't these people be getting paid for what they're doing and the amount of land that they're you know, using up to produce barley? So it's kind of an inevitable thing. And it leads me to a question too, because you're talking a lot about crop yield and that part of the disaster. The media reports a lot about people changing their crop. They talk about them deciding to grow corn because they can get 2 to 3 times the price per acre of corn because of ethanol and that being the new hot commodity and things like that. So is this really that big of a factor in the barley like the media says it is?
Yes, it is, and I think it's going to be, to get my crystal ball out, I think it's going to get worse. The issue we've seen in 2006 was absolutely related to weather. It was a disastrous harvest in two parts of the world, so that's purely a climatic or a weather-related phenomenon.
Okay.
In 2007, again, you've seen poor harvests in Australia, in Argentina, and in Northern Europe because of weather. But look at the price of corn. Because of the president's desire for us all to burn ethanol in our cars, there's been this big push to get corn ethanol. And to be honest with you, making ethanol from corn is probably the worst thing you can possibly do from both an environmental perspective, because you don't get a lot more energy out than you put in, and it's also not a good, because it completely wrecks the food market.
Yeah.
People grow corn for industrial uses, for starch. It's grown for human food use, but one of the largest uses of corn is for animal feed, and we feed them to cattle. It gets fed to pigs, which we all eat, or we use for dairy products. Now, the price of corn, despite planting lots and lots more corn, if we replace 10% of the gasoline that we burn with ethanol, there is insufficient land in the entirety of North America to grow corn to produce ethanol. So what's happened is you've had a massive diversion of corn from traditional uses such as animal feed, industrial uses, and human food into ethanol, and that's pushed the feed price through the roof. People raising cattle in feedlots have said, "Well, what else can we feed cattle?" One of the things, of course, is barley, but also wheat, oats, rye, any arable crop you can imagine. So what this has done is it's effectively put a huge pressure on the price of all arable crops, and it's likely to continue.
Yeah.
So that's really the sort of hidden thing behind biofuels, and we, you know, there's a lot more in biofuels we can talk about. One of the corn is not necessarily grown on the same land that the barley's grown on. It requires barley can be grown in pretty marginal land, and in Canada it's a 100-day crop. It's planted late and is harvested fairly early because of the it's so frozen the ground is. So it's planted in May and is pretty much in the bin by September.
Amazing.
Late September. Whereas corn requires quite a lot longer growing cycle.
Okay.
But it's almost an indirect phenomenon with corn. If the price of corn goes up, the feedlot's going to look for other arable crops, one of them, and so the price of barley goes up. But the other interesting product is canola, or in Europe it's called oilseed rape. That can be grown and is grown on the selfsame land that barley's grown on. In fact, it's grown as a rotational crop because it's a legume and will put nitrogen into the soil. And oilseed rape or canola can be very, very simply converted into biodiesel. And that's a real problem in Europe because a lot of the European countries, of course, have signed Kyoto, and they are actively looking to grow a lot more of their fuel. And a lot of Europeans drive diesel cars because gasoline's so hellishly expensive. So a lot of people drive diesel cars where they get sort of 55, 60 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
And so there's a ready market for biodiesel, a huge market for biodiesel.
Sure.
And so the canola is or oilseed rape is being planted very heavily. And so a lot of growers are saying, you know what, do I really want to plant barley at all? Do I really want to plant this malt quality barley that you want me to grow, or am I going to pay... grow oilseed rape and be guaranteed? And whereas you might turn, if you've got low viability on the barley, you might turn it away and then I have to sell it into feed. Well, so that's another issue that's going to start to affect pricing.
No, it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, I'm sure the farmers love their beer, but not over their paycheck. I mean, the bottom line is profit.
Yeah.
Which is starting to make me think about why I do beer radio. I should be doing something like biofuel radio or something. Switch over. I'm a hippie, sissy San Francisco boy myself when it comes to environmentalism and alternative fuels and all that, Ian. But when I saw the president stand up and say, we're really going to encourage ethanol this year and we're going to give incentives and we're going to do everything we can to get farmers to grow more corn, I thought it was one of the worst things I'd ever heard in terms of what you talked about, sort of the human environment and food and how these things are grown. And then the second thing I thought about was, oh shit, what about beer? Because I knew that barley growers just weren't making money already growing barley, and why wouldn't they just kind of flip and grow corn? About Canada that they couldn't just flip because of the climate. So that's good to hear.
Yes, it's not necessarily as simple as that, but they could grow canola. They could grow that
gotcha.
Very easily.
Okay.
But corn is a slightly different crop. But I mean, there are obviously some parts of the world where you can grow either or. But
sure.
But not in the northern prairie.
Okay, here's a question that came through from our listeners, which I think is a good one. We've just been talking about barley, but what about things like malted wheat and rye? Are we seeing the same crisis in these other crops?
No, you're seeing much lesser crisis in the other products, and the prices haven't gone up quite as much. Simply that the amount of wheat and rye that's required for malting is just very much smaller than barley. I mean, wheat is kind of a footnote to the amount of malted barley that's produced.
Okay.
So it's much easier to come by in terms of the international market. And, clearly the wheat is used for human food in a much greater proportion than barley is. Although some barley does make it into bread. There's a lot of barley malt, a fair amount of barley malt goes into bread to provide a little bit of sweetness so that the yeast has something to work on. But that's less of an issue.
Okay.
I don't think that there's so much a global shortage. It's just that the maltsters have had to pay a lot more to get the barley. Unlike hops, where there is a little bit goes into the sugar industry, but most of hops, 99% of it goes into beer. That's not the case in barley.
Sure.
Only a much smaller fraction goes into beer. So there is barley out there, but it's just of perhaps not the quality that everybody's looking for, and you know, the price is high because the growers have got the leverage.
Okay, so now this is starting to put it into perspective for me, which is what I really want to do. So I kind of want to go further with that. We've talked about why it's happened and the shortage, but so what does it mean? I mean, what is it? Does it to me, who's a consumer of beer and of course a home brewer also? Is the bottom line just that I have to pay more? Is there no other consequence?
Yes, I think so. There's got to be a correction, essentially. You know, the monsters are having to pay more for their raw material, so they're going to have to pass that on or face bankruptcy. I mean, there was an interesting case in 2006, Weisheimer Malt in Germany. A lot of brewers will book up their malt requirements way ahead of time.
Yeah.
So Weisheim had made sales to a bunch of German brewers and international brewers at price X, and then they'd got part of their barley covered with growers, and then they would buy a little bit on the open market. And then what happened, of course, the disaster happened. A lot of what came in they had to reject from their contract, so they had to go to the open market to buy, and they found that the price of barley was in excess of what they were going to sell their malt for.
Okay.
And so I'm sure they tried to renegotiate with the brewers, and that wasn't going to happen, although the brewers didn't agree to pay them more for the malt, and the banks wouldn't lend them the money, and so the business folded. And so this last year, what we found is, I mean, I buy quite a lot of malt. I buy a lot from Germany and England to supply the craft industry, and I wasn't getting any pricing out of my vendors until they knew the price of their barley. They weren't. And that's pretty much the entirety of Europe was like that, and also here in North America, nobody was gonna commit until you know they knew what their costs were, because otherwise they'd seen it happen in Germany, and you know, a company that had been around a long time went bankrupt. So
yeah.
You know, nobody's gonna take that risk.
What a difficult way to do business. Speaking of crystal ball, like, how are you telling your customers what they're gonna have to pay you to get them malt when no one's telling you?
Yeah. So you can't do it. So now, you know, a lot of the business this year has now been concluded. So, and I think that the situation in malt is not as anywhere near as desperate as hops.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's this major correction, and you know, now I think the industry is getting back into some sort of stability, and that's where it has to go. And certainly what I'm telling our customers and telling my sales guys to say to customers is we just need to bring the industry back into balance. You know, the entire supply chain has to have value in it, and otherwise, you know, the grower's simply not going to grow it, and the maltster's not going to make any money, so there's going to be no reinvestment.
Yeah.
I mean, this is another interesting topic, and that's the growth in beer consumption internationally, and here. I mean, the craft industry grew by, what, 12% last year?
Yeah, 13, I think, even.
13, yeah. So, but internationally, beer consumption has been going up, about 3 to 5% a year. And so if you take that in from the whole world, each year, if it grows by, say, 2.5%, and there's a slide that talks about this, if it grows by 2.5%, additional beer demand is 234 million hectolitres. So that's about 234 million barrels there and thereabouts. To make that, you're going to need about 500,000 tons of malt per year.
Yeah.
Additional. So, RAR produces about 500,000 metric tons out of two facilities, one in Alberta and one in Shakopee. So each one of those facilities costs about $100 million to put up.
Wow.
So it's a big investment, and that's going to be required every single year So you're looking at several hundred million every year for the next 5 years to satisfy demand.
Yeah.
So really, you know, the industry has to engage and say, okay, well, we know that we're going to commit. We know that we're going to need this much barley malt. We will make the commitment, and then the industry will respond. But at the pricing levels where they were, that's why no capacity's gone in.
Right.
So it's also a question of malt house capacity as well as return for the farmer. But I think the industry is coming back into balance. You've seen there's been some construction plans announced in Europe. And I think we've seen where barley's going to top out now. I think unlike hops, I think this correction and the new pricing is going to have the desired effect.
And is the pricing? I mean, the pricing with hops is so dramatic, double, triple, sometimes quadruple the price as it was a year and 2 years ago. Is it so dramatic in malt anyway? Is it balanced?
Yeah, it is. It's double. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It really is double.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the slideshow, everybody, Ian's right. There are a couple great slides in there talking about the supply and demand, and you can really see where, there are countries that are negative and countries that are positive, and it's just really a weird balance in what's available out there. It also, as you're talking about this balance, I think you bring up a good point, Ian, about how small the beer industry is in this. So it sounds like everybody's probably fighting for how it's all going to be restructured, not just the beer industry, everybody. And I don't think obviously it's a crisis right now, but it just doesn't really sound quite so bad the way you talk about it. It's really going to even out, I think. And
well, I think it is, yeah. It has to. I mean, it's just come about because of these two shocks, if you like, of a double poor harvest.
Yeah.
I mean, when I wrote this presentation, I really went through it sequentially as a lecture as opposed to a Q&A session like we're doing here. But you can kind of go through it yourself. But by the end of it, of writing it, I found my conclusions were pretty pessimistic. And since I wrote it, that we have seen some of the prices come off a little bit, and we have seen these announcements of construction. So, but, you know, you look at the conclusion slide, you know, cost of malt up sharply from the previous 2 years, poor global barley yields for two consecutive harvests has resulted in a barley shortage.
Yeah.
Poor return to growers has resulted from a flight from malting barley to other crops. Poor return for maltsters has led to a lack of investment. And, I really got into quite some sort of miserable thinking as I wrote the outlook.
Yeah, poor Ian's like hanging himself in the shower as he's writing this presentation.
So, you know, in the outlook page, I kind of thought about it, you know, the price corrections are necessary to and long overdue to safeguard the supply, and I think these have been understood by brewers and they've stuck. You know, biofuels is a big deal. I mean, the problem there is the industry is really in its infancy.
Yeah,
and you know the it could have if there's not some real thinking about cellulosic ethanol instead of using the ear of corn, using the stalk and the waste product,
yeah.
Then once that technology happens, there'll be less demand on these food products that we eat. But the other big thing is climate change. I mean, why have we had two appalling harvests in Europe and Australia in the last 2 years? And I mean, I don't think, you know, I read a lot of the literature. There is no debate in the scientific community about what global warming can do. And I think, yeah, you know, everybody's talking about sea level changes and disastrous hurricanes. But one of the issues that we've really all got to face is what's this going to mean to plants? I mean, we can put a pullover on, we can switch the air conditioning up and send more CO2 into the air, but the plants can't do anything.
Yeah.
And that's a real issue. How, you know, how are we going to cope with feeding ourselves? And our entire civilization has grown up in a climate that's been very benign for at least 150 years. So
yeah.
I got myself into a pretty miserable way of thinking when I wrote this. And so I wrote a red column and a green column. The green column is that, you know, prices have eased somewhat in recent weeks. The price corrections may be sufficient. I think they are sufficient. But we've really got to get cellulosic ethanol sorted out very quickly, because that will then take the pressure off these seed crops.
I think you could have put like a happy face and a sad face above your
red.
Yeah,
maybe I should
there.
Do that. Yeah.
You know, why I should pull the trigger and why I should not.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to say, I am so holding back in this interview right now, Ian, because I know that the beer guys out there are so sick of me talking about this stuff. I got to have a beer with you because the things that you're talking about with food production and figuring that part of it out before we know what it's going to mean here are I would love it if this was an environment show at this moment instead of a beer show because you're really hitting things home for me. It's all the stuff that I think about that I love that we're looking for alternative sources, but how can a... See, now I can't hold back anymore. How can in a world where people aren't eating,
where people are starving,
we start to think about producing food for fuel? And it drives me insane, just that part of it. And then, of course, how it upsets the balance of an industry like this. And agriculture is a very difficult industry to balance anyway. It has been for a long time. So somebody is as powerful as the president of the United States stands up and says, we're really going to push to make food for fuel, what an upsetting thing it is to everything, the economy, the beer production, farmers, I mean everything. So anyway, without going too far into it, I really enjoy what you're saying about this because you're right, it's such a big factor.
And it's interesting that that's not affecting the hop side. That's pure supply and demand.
Yeah.
But this is interestingly, I mean, the climate's effects haven't had a whole lot of effect on hops, although I suppose we have seen a couple of storms this year. I heard from one of the hop growers in the Worcestershire area, his hops were under 4 feet of water when those floods happened in the Severn Valley. So it's kind of interesting what's going on. It's going to be fascinating to see what the growing season of 2008 brings.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so with the price rise in beer, you know, just kind of bringing it back to that for a second, I know it's hard because it's weird that these two things are happening at once, both the hops and the malt problem.
It is, yeah. And that's the hard part for brewers is that this has come on the heels of the price of stainless steel going up, the price of glass going up, cardboard going up. So it's pretty tough. And I think, you know, because the positive side, because this has happened together and it's been so widely publicized, and this is one of the reasons why I agreed to come on here, is to explain to people just what the craft brewer in particular, but also the major brewer is going through as well. I mean, there's nothing they can do about this, and there's nothing the malt industry can do about it, and there's nothing the hop industry can do about it. So really, you know, what I'm not sure about what it's going to mean for the growth of the industry, but the reality is that if these corrections don't occur, then brewers won't be able to get their raw materials, and they have to pass it on. I mean, it's the malts that certainly couldn't absorb a doubling or a tripling in the price of barley.
Sure.
To give you some idea, I mean, you know, I suppose we can talk about barley prices because they are, you can look them up in the Wall Street Journal, so it's not exactly a trade secret. But,
okay.
A couple of years ago, and as you've seen from that chart, but here in North America, barley was about $150 a ton.
Okay.
This year it peaked at $450.
Wow.
To give you an understanding
of
how that... And so, you know, that's what the maltsters were up against, and it's a case of, look, guys, if we can't sell this to you at a higher price, it isn't going to be there. You know, we're not going to sell it to you because... And the other interesting thing that's going on is what's happening with currency as well. I mean, the dollar's very weak right now, and so a lot of the European malts that people use, like Maris Otter, it's going to be a lot more expensive because of the strength of sterling versus the dollar. Mm. The other interesting thing is what the Far East is doing, because the Far East economies, Singapore, Thailand, Japan, big one, Japan, and all of those countries have got large populations that all like drinking beer. And their consumption's going up significantly.
Yeah.
Traditionally, they can't grow any barley themselves, so they buy malt from Australia, which is geographically the closest area, but also Canada and Europe, but mainly Australia because it's closest. Because of the disastrous harvest last year, they've actually come shopping in Canada, and because of the strength of the currency, they really are prepared to pay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is the other problem for the craft brewers, is a lot of the maltsters, and I think everybody's kind of saying, well, look, Mr. Craft Brewer, you know, we love your beer, we really like doing business with you, we want to be able to supply you, but there's a nice man in Japan prepared to pay twice what you're prepared to pay.
Sure.
You know, and we've not been making much money for the past few years. So, you know, there's a little bit of that as well. So because of the strength of the currency, they're able to shop here and get good value. And I think the hops as well, I mean, I don't know whether Ralph talked about that, but the Europeans have got very strong currency. So if they can get the hops out of America, they get a big bang for their buck, you know.
Yeah, he did talk about that. All right, help me. Can you dumb this down for me a little bit? Maybe make an estimate for me if you could, because you're pretty familiar with the whole industry and certainly the glass and the rising costs of transportation with all of this. What does it mean? Put it down to a six pack for me. If you could talk about what I might expect this price increase to be. I mean, what are we really talking about?
Okay, I've heard, I mean, a lot of brewers talk about the price of case goods. If one actually takes, and this is the bit that every craft brewer is going to hate me now, the actual cost to a brewer for the raw materials prior to this year was actually quite modest.
Yeah.
You know, in a pint of beer, let's talk about a pint because I like talking about pints.
Yeah.
The cost of malt for an average beer, and it's very hard to say what an average beer is because you've got gravities all over the place, a strong beer versus a weak beer. But the average cost was about, I don't know, 10 to 12 cents in a pint.
Okay.
So that's doubled. On the malt side, and it's doubled or tripled on the hop side, and that was just that figure of 10 to 12 cents was purely on the malt.
Okay.
So it's kind of doubled, but everything else has gone up for the brewer as well, and you know, don't forget there's the energy input, there's the yeast, there's the labor, there's all that. So
insurance,
you know, it's hard
thing.
To compare the price of the raw material to a retail price of a pint, but that gives you some idea of the significance of, so the raw material prices have doubled. So I would say that, you know, it's hard for me to say because I don't know what my customers are putting their price of a case up by, but I think, look at it this way, I came here, I don't know, in the year 2000, but I visited in 1999, and I haven't seen the price of a six-pack go up that much in that period.
Well, and but see, also what I'm, you know, you're all talking about prices doubling and tripling of materials, but
yes.
I am not going to go to the grocery store and find a $14 six pack.
No,
of beer.
You're not.
I won't.
You're not.
That's not going. The whole thing isn't going to get passed along. And let's face it, just like you've said, the margin for a small brewer who's successfully selling his beer it's huge. It's a huge margin. If he's making a glass of beer for, let's bump it up to 20 cents. If he's making a glass of beer for 20 cents and he's selling it at his brew pub for $4.50, there are industries that would beg for a margin like that. So,
well, but I think you've got that's perhaps only true of brew pubs, and it really isn't. I mean, when you think about the cost of the raw materials, yeah, okay, the malt side of it might be around 20 to 30 cents because you might be buying specialty malts, okay?
Yeah.
But the labor cost of making that is on a very small scale is very significant. The cost of the premise that they're brewing it in is expensive. They're paying top dollar for electricity and all the rest of it. So, yes, it's a good business to be in a brew pub, but it's not as significant as one might think. And you know, a small microbrewery, I do feel for some of the microbrewers this year because, you know, they're not getting $4.50 a pint. They're perhaps getting, you know, wholesale they're selling it by the keg, and the distributors take a big slice, and then, you know, the retailers mark it up again. So we've got to be mindful that each step you know, between the wholesaler and the retailer, you know, they're practically doubling the price each time, you know. So
I think
we've got to be a little bit careful and in that. But I think it is true that, you know, one of my customers actually said to me, you know what, Ian, had these increases happened year in, year out, not the doubling, but, you know, a modest increase 5% each year, for example, then right now we'd be at $9.99 a six-pack in the grocery store and nobody would blink.
You're right, yeah.
But this is because it's gone from there's been no price increases for a very long time, that now we're seeing this spike that people are going to sort of scratch their head when they see, you know, a six-pack go up by $1 or $2, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, because that's what I think. I'm thinking $2. That's what it's going to go up, and it sounds like maybe that's what you're thinking as well, even with all these increases. So now
but not all of that's related to ingredients. You know, some of that's glass, some of that's cardboard, some of that's,
right,
you know, the brewers wanting to. I mean, and their utility and everything else is going up.
So. Yeah. Hey, can I
think there's been a bit of pent-up energy, you know?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Now everyone's like, well, F it. We got plenty of things to blame it on. Let's go ahead.
That's right.
You know, we've been waiting to do this. And you're right. If it had happened incrementally over a period of years, nobody would have thought any different about it. And it is kind of strange that it never did happen. I guess I think the craft beer industry, if I could think about it for a second, I think it's been insecure for a long time, and they've been really insecure about their market value and what they mean to the consumer. And now they know. There's no more insecurity. They know how important they are to us, and they should be. And now it's like, okay, we can go ahead and attach these price increases because we do add value and people are willing to pay it. So it's all this stuff at once, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to back you up for a second and talk about you had mentioned really early in this conversation about how high-quality malt, it just stuck out in my head. I wanted to ask you from a chemistry perspective. High-quality malt has less enzymes in it.
Yeah.
A thick kernel with less enzymes. Why is that? I thought that enzymes and enzymatic activity was, you know, the kind of the key to malting. So why do we want less?
Okay, if you think about the barley crops that were available in Europe, the varieties were because that's kind of where brewing started. Okay, or modern day brewing. I mean, clearly it started in Sumeria or wherever way back. But the Germans and the Belgians and the Brits and the Czechs really worked on brewing, and they selected grains that had lots of carbohydrate. The reason you want lots of carbohydrate is because you want that carbohydrate to be converted to sugar, and then that sugar for the yeast to work on the sugar to produce alcohol. So the more carbohydrate you've got in there, the better bang for your buck you're getting in terms of providing a good amount of alcohol in the beer.
Okay.
And so the barley is a maritime plant, and clearly barley doesn't evolve for us to make beer. It evolves for its own survival. And in a gentle climate, if a plant can put by a big fat reserve of carbohydrate in the seed, it stands a good chance the following year of reproducing itself and growing again. And when you've got a lot of carbohydrate, you need a little amount of enzyme to do that. Now, if we took that barley and we brought it over to the United States and Canada, where the climate is not quite so suited for growing barley, so it's only the very hardy varieties that can survive. And because the growing season is rather short, there's insufficient time for the plant to put by a big fat reserve of carbohydrates. So a North American grain tends to be rather thinner.
Okay.
And because the plant's not put so much carbohydrate by, it needs very active enzymes to be able to take that meager carbohydrate reserve and convert it into sugar. So you've got very, very hot varieties here with lots of enzyme. Now, the reason that for craft beer they're not quite so good is because you really want to make an all malt brew to get the intensity of flavor.
Yeah.
And malts that have a lot of enzyme tend to have a very earthy kind of taste. And the brilliant strategy that the large American brewers, particularly Anheuser-Busch, came up with is they recognized that here they've got this very hot barley with lots of enzyme, but not much carbohydrate. So if we use some rice in it, we can use the enzymes that the barley produces to digest the rice to give us the alcohol that we need. And, of course, rice doesn't have a lot of flavor, so they balanced it with a very light level of hops to give at least a balanced beer.
Right.
But what the craft brewer is looking for is looking for flavor. He's looking for intensity of flavor to balance with his vibrant Northwest hops.
Sure.
And so really what you want to find with a craft brewer, you want lots of carbohydrate. You don't need the enzymes so much. And because the enzymes tend to give us, you know, they have a sort of a funky sort of earthy taste.
Okay.
And it's difficult to control as well. It's difficult to control the mashing process with a very hot malt.
Okay.
So that's basically why.
All right, good. Well, that makes sense. And it stuck out to me at the beginning. I wanted to make sure I asked you about that. A couple questions came through from our listeners through the conversation, too. So you had mentioned the winter crop. So people were asking about, so there are then cold hardy strains of grain that are grown in that season?
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, the winter in Northern Europe is, the climate's so different to here. Are in the grain-growing regions, I should say. I mean, the interior of the U.S., I was in Minnesota only a couple of days ago, and it was absolutely freezing. You know, the ground is frozen solid, so there's no way you could grow winter varieties in North Dakota or Alberta or any of those provinces in where the grain is grown. But in England and in France particularly, where there's a lot of winter varieties grown, the climate's very mild. I mean, you get the odd frost, but it's not frozen solid. The ground doesn't freeze solid, and so the plants can withstand overwintering. And the reason that those varieties do well is because they've got a very long growing season. So they're planted in the fall. They've got all of the winter till they sprout. They sit there. They go dormant a little bit, but there's still leaves on the plant. And then come the springtime, they're off to a head start. And the varieties that tend to be winter are very, very plump, fat varieties, you know, Marisotto being a classic one. It's a big fat kernel and lots of carbohydrate and great flavor, you know.
Right, absolutely. Okay. Hey, JP, what this question that you've given me from the listeners here, is this guy, is he somebody that knows Ian and has, like,
no,
it's just a weird question.
Yeah, the question was, he wrote that, and then right after that he goes, I don't care how relevant it is.
All right. Well,
and so that's my job. Right. Is to pass questions.
No, you're right.
You.
And yeah. Ian, we kind of pride ourselves on the listeners get to ask you questions. So
okay.
And it's like the fourth time he's asked too.
Okay.
So
there's nothing
off.
Wrong. Nothing wrong with the question. It's just really off topic. The person wants to know what your opinion of barley wine is. I guess I don't know.
My opinion of barley wine.
Yes.
He's getting really drunk off him right now.
I see. Yeah, that's what's happening.
I don't know. I love beer. I've loved it for years and years and years. And I'm quite traditional in my palate for beer.
Okay.
I really like a good German lager, and I absolutely adore a nice cask conditioned lunchtime cooking bitter that's about sort of 3.5% alcohol, beautifully balanced with some nice Fuggles or Goldings, and don't get me wrong, I really like sort of Northwest pale ale as well, and I'm enjoying a California pale ale right now.
Yeah.
But that's where what I grew up on, and that's the kind of beer I really like. And I'm pretty lightweight. I'm not very big, and I'm not very heavy. And barley wines get me really drunk really quickly. And I tend to like weaker beers, and I like volume. You know, if I'm sitting down, I want 4 pints. I think I remember Michael Lewis gave a great talk at a craft brewers conference, and he said, you know what, guys, I'm a 4 pint man. And I'm getting too old for this, and you guys brew beers way too strong for me.
Yeah.
And I think it's true. I suppose he's a celebrant as well, I guess. So I think I like a fair volume when I sit down for a few beers with friends. I like to be able to not fall flat on my face. So barley wines, I do enjoy them, but only in little sips.
Okay.
I think that Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. It's fair enough. And by the way, I've got a couple topics that you could come on the show and talk about anytime. You've been a great guest. I just let you know this happens every time. They get a little weird and creepy at the end. Next thing you know, they're going to be asking what color your sheets are. It gets ugly around here. You just never know what they're going to ask. All right. Well, listen, Ian, you've been a fantastic guest. A lot of information. I'd love to have just a kind of a malt chemistry show with you. You obviously know what you're talking about. I think that Doc could probably geek out with you on the chemistry side of these things.
Then we get complaints from the chat room.
Yeah, they start to. it's not drinking material for them. But I really appreciate you hanging out. I'd love to have you on the show again.
Okay.
If you got any time.
Well, maybe I can do it in person next time. We can have a beer.
There you go. That's kind of the way we like to do it around here. You can go to our forum right now, thebrewingnetwork.com, and click on the forum button and actually download Ian's presentation that he put together. And you put that together for the industry, right?
Yeah, I did. I did that for, what did I do this one for? Maybe I did this one for the Para, or maybe I did this one for, I put this together and it's evolved. I put it together in 2006 and it's gradually evolved with more and more data as the thing comes in. And I do want to continue to do that as we observe the trends.
Right,
and some of it I've kind of purloined from other people, and some of it my colleagues have provided up in Alberta and in Shakopee. It follows the pricing trends, and it's kind of what interests me right now. I used to be really interested in beer clarification and stabilization, but these days I've gone on to be more interested in the agronomics and what the climate's doing to this crop that we enjoy. And
yeah.
You know, so that's kind of my interest right now. So I'm trying to follow it, and I'll do that. And you know, there's some of the slides there. There's some satellite imagery that I kind of follow. That you can see the weather patterns. I get that from the EU, and so we kind of want to know what's going on. It's pretty important that we kind of monitor those. So
absolutely. See, I can't do a show about that because people will just piss and moan the whole time.
Yeah, but I'm sure. Yeah.
This is why I want to have a beer with you, because that's the stuff I'm interested in too. I mean, absolutely, watching these things change and how relevant it is, you know.
Yeah,
it's such a wide ranging thing. Doc, did you hear? We could have done a whole show about clarification and beer stability with Ian too. I mean, that's another great topic right there.
Ian,
yeah, go ahead, JP.
Ian is one of those guys that knows a lot about a lot of stuff,
right?
And so you sit and you talk with him, and he just talks, he just goes, and he has these little layers of stuff where you could easily get sidetracked off this one conversation trail,
right,
into a bunch of stuff that he just knows. He knows all sorts of stuff, like clarification, you know, hops, all that kind of garbage.
And the whole time he makes you
super, super interesting.
And he makes you feel like a retard.
Yeah, and then it's about an hour and a half in, you're like, dude, I could, you know, I really want to just spend the whole day, you know, just talking about stuff. He's like,
yeah.
No, I gotta go, you know, I gotta whip off to this one place and sell a bunch of stuff, and I gotta do this, and you know, I'll be around. And he leaves, and you never see him again.
You know,
just, I don't know, it's awesome.
Even less now I've got a little kid, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now you're even less available, I'm sure of it. All right,
like the fact that you can look at a weather map and tell me how much my beer is going to cost next year.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, how much does beer cost? I don't know, could you bring up Google Maps real quick? I'll let you know. No, that's pretty cool, man. Well, you're doing good work over there. And again, I really thank you for your time. I know it's a Sunday night and you got a family there going on. So really appreciate it. I think you guys, between you and Ralph, really cleared up a lot of stuff for us this week. So I thank you for that.
I hope so. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for the opportunity, guys. And keep at it, guys. Thanks a lot.
We will. No worries. Go have a beer. Enjoy the new kid. And we'll talk to you soon.
Get a couple hours sleep while you can.
Yeah. Doc knows.
Thanks.
All right, Ian. Take care.
Guys. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Later, Ian. Thanks. Right.
There you go. That's a cool guy.
I like that guy.
He's a good dude.
He's very good dude.
You know, Shat is telling me when he booked Ian, which we thought was a real big score.
It totally is.
He goes, you know, JP said a while back, you guys will never get Ian.
You'll never get Ian on the show. I said you'll never pin him down. Not because he's too good for us or whatever.
No, of course.
But because he's super busy.
Yeah.
Like, guy's just, he's just busy guy.
What's he doing on a Sunday night?
Exactly. Well, the fact I think that he just had a kid really pretty much anchors him down.
Yeah.
That's probably the only way. So you should thank you know, him and his sperm and his wife
We'd like to
for
thank
coming on there.
We'd like to thank Ian's sperm.
Slowing him down enough to do our show.
I'll tell you, Shat was real proud of himself, and I was pretty proud of him, too. And I just wanted to make sure I mentioned JP.
So he's got a job for another week?
Good looking out, buddy.
That Shat rocked it, despite the naysayers.
I'm going to give you a standing ovation.
Oh, there you go. All right. Oh, he is standing, and it's a real ovation.
Good information, though, all around. I mean, this is stuff we need to hear.
Cleared up a lot of stuff.
Thanks, so, Chad. Don't speak.
What?
Son of a...
Captain Obvious.
I think, really, though, certainly get Ian to come hang out in the studio and do one of these chem shows with us, because I actually really perked up when he said clarification and beer stability, man. That'd be a great topic for the two of you, Doc, to be able to talk about. And by the way...
Colin in here, too, and we can all geek out.
It's your show next week, Doc. You and Chris Graham are going to be talking about how to build... a brew house.
Oh, cool.
So Graham has done the how to upgrade your brew system talk with us and a whole PowerPoint thing. But this time we're actually talking about building a brew house. So I know you're kind of hanging back this week as these guys dole out the info. But next week it's you and Graham's.
All right.
Really kind of.
There's been some things on the forums and the email AJ thing that about what do I need for a brew house.
Yeah. So we're going to cover that next week. We're not leaving. We got a bunch of listener beer we got to try.
Can I just say Chad is getting major props?
Is he?
In the chat room.
All right.
Hey, Chad, the next thing you know, you'll have your own thread on the forum where they say
he's just happy he's got his job for another week.
Yeah. Chad was on the verge of getting fired until he booked this week's show. So
I would give him 2 weeks on that.
You're at least here through Christmas. Do I have to take that before the break?
It's a brewing question, so it's up to you.
Yeah,
we actually have people in the chat trying to call. Like, I think it's you opened the floodgates as soon as Ian went off.
Oh.
It's just kind of like,
I see.
You know, back to normal. We can all screw around now.
They don't feel like they're interrupting anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the phone was awfully quiet.
Hey, caller, who
it's
we talking?
It's like chat blue balls.
Who are we talking to? Caller.
Hey, this is Danny.
Danny, what's
from Temecula.
All right, brother.
Hey.
And brewing a Pliny clone tonight.
Ah, very
nice.
You got the hops for that?
Oh, yeah. I got the kit from B3, so we're all set.
All right, good job.
I got 5 minutes left in my boil. I forgot to put my chiller in until like 5 minutes ago.
Ah.
What's worse, not letting the chiller get, you know, sanitized enough or going too long on the boil?
You can split the difference, too. As long as it's above 180, you're probably good about sanitizing it. You could do a little bit longer on the boil. You know, split the difference.
What's another 5 minutes, right?
Exactly. What's another 5 minutes? It's going to take could take 15 minutes to cool down below 180, so you're still good.
Awesome.
Yeah, go another 5 minutes.
And the fact that you cleaned that immersion chiller so well last time, you probably got nothing to worry about.
Yeah, did you?
It was totally clean. Totally clean. Had it down real nice.
Good. And you're fine. Yeah, don't worry about
it.
Gotcha. You'll be all right.
But the alcohol in the Pliny clone will kill everything anyway.
That's true. It's all a high. Yeah. All right, brother.
All right, guys. Take care.
Cheers. Good luck with that Pliny.
Cheers.
All right, brother. Okay, break time, everybody. So we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we got some listener beer to try. I didn't even do the feedback segment.
Got to do feedback.
Got to do a little bit of that. There's not too much of it anyway. A couple questions. So stick with us. Great show, everybody. Good guest tonight. I want to thank Ralph, and I want to thank Ian. You guys are great and good guests. So hang in there, kids. We'll be back in, I don't know, like 5 minutes.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
If you like the prices you get from the major homebrew shops but live on the wrong coast, or if your local homebrew shop doesn't carry what you need, or if you just want a shop where you are appreciated as a customer and treated like a friend, head on over to the Do-It-Yourself Brewing Company at DIYbrewing.com, the new local brew shop for you and your beers. They have an extensive selection and are bringing new products in on a daily basis. In fact, if you need something they don't have, just let them know, and they'll get it for you as soon as humanly possible. Check out all their products, recipe kits, kits, winemaking supplies, and specials at DIYBrewing.com. With everything from ferminators, work chillers, to carboys, DIY Brewing either has what you need or can get it fast. At DIY, they're homebrewers helping homebrewers get what you need. Visit them in Rollinsworth, New Hampshire. Call 603-205-4168. And stop by DIYBrewing.com and get brewing. Do it yourself with a little help from DIY Brewing.
Hi, I'm Sean O'Sullivan, the brewmaster and co-founder of the 21st Amendment Brewery and Restaurant in San Francisco. 6 years ago, Nico Freccia and I opened the 21st Amendment on 2nd Street with the intent of bringing back the local neighborhood brewpub. Well, the neighborhood has really changed over the years, but the 21st Amendment still remains a great place for people to meet over a terrific meal and a tasty pint of beer. In the past, the only way you could enjoy the 21st Amendment's handcrafted beers was at the brewpub. Well, all that has changed. Now, the 21st Amendment beers are available in cans. That's right, cans. When was the last time you had a great beer in a can? Well, that day has come. We're offering our world-famous Watermelon Wheat and 21A IPA in cans. Cans are a better package than glass because cans keep the beer fresher longer, but you can also take cans to places where bottles can't go, like the beach, lake, golf courses, and sporting events. So join us in the revolution to take back the can from the big breweries and crack open a cold 21A craft beer in a can. The 21st Amendment, 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park.
What's funny is, brewers will say, yeah, I don't brew to style. I'm brewing my own beer. And it's like a German Pilsner, but it's black.
Yeah, it's a sports beer. You know.
The home of live beer radio.
TheBrewingNetwork.com.
Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck. You're listening to The Session.